For the Deputy Minister of Communications, who is attending the FPB Council meeting, and apologies for Ms. Pumla Williams, DG for GCIS. Mr. Curran will take her place. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Hajira. I do see that Honorable Kubeka, your hand is up.
Yes, Chair. Can I just pass the apology of Honorable Faku? She's on flight, but she would land at 20 to 10. She'll join us at 20 to 10, Chair. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Kubeka. Am I leaving any other hand, Hajira, that I may have not recognized?
Nothing, Chair.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, you can lower your hand, Honorable Kubeka. Honorable members and our guests, I just want to dispense with the formalities for the smooth running of the meeting, that we must always remind ourselves of the rules applying on virtual meetings. For the smooth running of the meeting, we are all expected to mute our mics, switch off your video camera if you are not recognized to speak or on the platform. This would also apply to those that may lose network in the process and have to reconnect, that as you are coming back to the meeting, just ensure that every time you rejoin the meeting, your mic is muted, so as your background sound does not distract a speaker that may be on the platform in the meeting. Let's keep this. This will also apply in the point of orders. You would not just switch on your mic, but you'll have to raise your hand on the platform and you'll be recognized as such. But all those that would be speaking, having been recognized by the chairperson to speak, please ensure that your mic is unmuted as well as your video camera is switched on. But if you are experiencing network challenges, please indicate so that we know that there are connectivity problems, hence you are unable to switch on your video camera. This is important, honorable members and guests, in that South Africans may also want to see those that are making a contribution or talking to them. On a lighter note, Honorable Kubeka, last night, because the meeting was live on 408, last night I saw you speaking because your camera was not working. The picture used was not yours, even though the names were yours. And I had to quickly take a photo and send it through, that they must update that because people may think that's you. And I'm just raising this to demonstrate that indeed, if there are network issues, let's indicate, but where people are able to switch on their video cameras without problems of the band, let's do so, just to make it easier for people to follow the discussion. Right. As I said, honorable members, we will be dealing with the department and then the the notice received, which had a route flight, it's about completing the two entities from DCTT, then take the department, which will be introduced by the Deputy Minister, as well as the entity that reports to that department. And that would make things easier. Of course, as I open the meeting, I have to just recognize one important commemoration event that on this day in the constituency where one comes from, they are now commemorating as I'm on the platform. The Swanville massacre, well known to have happened in the early 90s and 1991. Where a number of people would have been killed in that violence, which was state-sponsored at the time. And as they commemorate today, in the main, it's about how Swanville firstly has developed since then and other interventions that are still needed to get the area to higher levels. From a point of job creation, the housing and so on. So I just thought I should recognize them, that's what it's happening in that space. Others may have seen it in papers at that time, as well as on television, that prominent leaders like Comrade Chris at the time would have also been around to witness and motivate people at the time. So I just thought I should raise that as we open. That having been said, honorable members, I'm sure the department, in the absence of the political leadership, given the valid apologies that we have received, the department may be able to introduce the entities. In the absence of that, would give to the entities as they appear on the notice. May I just clarify that in terms of time, we are taking into account that the members would have received the presentations well on time, unless there are areas where you would want to emphasize changes that may be there. But otherwise, members would have received, and that's the reason we allocate the time we are allocating. We are giving 15 minutes per presentation on the entities and the department. And of course, that excludes the few opening remarks that the Deputy Minister may make before the department and MDA comes in. So just time yourselves so that I don't have to remind you that you are now going beyond the time, because that may just disturb the flow of your presentation. Just time it yourselves in that regard. Otherwise, that's how we're going to approach the meeting, as the meeting is now officially opened. May I just check if from DCPT, because I can't see it on the platform, whether we do have the MDG to introduce. Okay, over to you, Acting.
A very good morning, Honourable Chair, and I'd like to also greet the Honourable Members. Special greetings to the Deputy Minister in the Presidency, as well as my colleagues from GCIS. Greetings to our entities as well. Chair, I'm going to be very, very brief. Just to introduce the new board members, the interim board member at CETA. It is led by Chairperson Mr. Mpolisi Zika, as well as Mr. Andrew Murray, Mr. Themba Phiri, whom I've seen is on the chat, as well as Ms. Jeanette Morane, who is the government representative. Chair, as the department, we are presenting the two APPs, that of Dot Zedna as well as CETA, both of which we have checked them, Honorable Chair and members, against the MTSF as well as the Minister's Performance Agreement, and we were quite happy. More so, these entities are very strategic as we look at the transformation of the sector, as well as empowerment of SMMEs, as well as then moving ahead with regards to eGov, especially in the current circumstances as we're still faced with COVID-19. And we've got to make sure that all government systems are reliable, efficient, and we are able then to provide the services to the people. So with that, I'd like to then hand over to Dr. Zedna. I see that the chair is here, along with the CE, and then followed by CETA. Thank you.
Good morning, and thank you very much. Good morning to the Deputy Minister and the Presidency, the Chair of the Portfolio Committee members, chairpersons present here today, CEOs, DGs present, and officials of the department. For the year 2021-2022, we have five key priorities at Zedna. Over and above ensuring that the Zedna living space is resilient, robust, and stable at all times, we also endeavor to transform the DNS sector by offering technical training in an effort to open up the sector to new players, in particular in rural and peri-urban areas. The five key priority areas are as follows: sustainable and resilient domain namespace, empowered communities, I think the DG just spoke to that, stakeholder engagement, and to effectively regulate the domain namespace and to become a smart regulator. The CEO, Mr. Molehe Wesi, will give details of the key priorities, and Mr. Jemin Motlaung, the finance manager, will outline the 2021-2022 budget. I will now hand over to Mr. Molehe Wesi to take us through the five key priorities. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, Chairperson of the committee, honorable members. And I would like to also acknowledge the Deputy Minister from the Presidency, and of course my colleagues from the CDP, and all South Africans joining on the various platforms. As mentioned, Chair, by my board chairperson, Zedna will be focusing, of course, on five strategic outcomes. And mine, Chairperson, will just be focusing on those, meaning that I will skip some of them, the slides, and going straight into the APP, considering the time that has been allocated. However, notable, Chair, is that for this particular financial year, we are building on some considerable achievements, considering that we were hit by the pandemic as an organization, and we had to review how we operate internally, and of course how we engage our stakeholders while we still achieve our intended outcomes. With that said, for the year, for the past financial year, we reached a target of 90% in terms of achievement, and of course we missed only one, which was we had wishes of attaining approved registry and registrar licensing framework regulations in line with the prescripts of the ECT Act. However, we will continue with a particular project and ensure that it is achieved in this forthcoming financial year or the current financial year. Moving on, Chair, as indicated, the focus is on the five, and in particular, what is notable with this, vis-a-vis the ones from the previous year, we had to review our strategic intent. And the review that we embarked on focused mainly on just bringing some synergies and alignment in terms of what we do as an organization and what the department has to achieve. More so, what is it that is expected from our minister in terms of her deliverables? Hence, we saw it fitting that we would then relook at the sustainable and resilient domain space outcome, Furthermore, we will ensure that we become an effective regulator within the dominion space. And of course, we become a smart regulator enabled by maturing our governance processes and of course, ensuring that we are supported by skilled and performing staff and automation of our own business processes. As we saw through the unfortunate pandemic that every organization has to undergo some digitization of some form, and we are embarking on that journey as a doctor now. Moving on, Chair, just an overview of the targets for the forthcoming 5 years. I think I will not spend too much time on this particular slide. However, I will note that we have taken a position that as much as we want to register 125,000 dominions over a period of 5 years, we would like to now introduce a new marker or outcome to say we want to now manage the growth rate of these particular dominions by leveraging various platforms that we have forged through the number of relationships we have built over the years. And one in particular is the one of CIPC, whereby we want to leverage that particular platform to register more domain names, in particular SMMEs, to give them that digital presence as they register their companies through the CIPC platform. Furthermore, Chair, the other one is at the bottom, which is the public schools. In line with the intent of the department to say they would like to connect 80% of the schools, but we are saying as Zedna, within our limited resources, we will be connecting 2,300 schools within specific quintiles across the country, and this will give them domain names, thus affording learners and then the schools themselves to have a digital presence. And this is quite necessary, especially in this current state and, of course, within the era that we are in of the fourth industrial revolution. Moving on, the other target that we are saying we are introducing into the plan or we have introduced is defining a unique value proposition. Most of our stakeholders have engaged us in the past to say at times we seem a little bit distant from them. So we are saying in response to that, we will now have a strategic intent to understand their needs and so that we actually align our operations to address those needs. And in the same breath, Chair, we are hoping through this endeavor we'll identify new opportunities where we can grow the domain name space into. And in closing, we are also going to capacitate the current technical skill base within the sector by providing technical skills, focusing on SMMEs and of course those that exist within the sector. And this is simply because there was an outcry from our members to say we need to facilitate this particular endeavor. Furthermore, we do sit with an aging skill set, and by introducing these skill sets and new players, we are now ensuring that there's sustainability within the remaining space. The one that also is notable is that one of repeat findings. This speaks to us maturing our governance processes. We would like to reduce any repeat findings. In fact, the intent is to eliminate any repeat findings for the forthcoming 5 years. And of course, we want to improve staff satisfaction while we also look at manager effectiveness. As it is known, Chair, staff members don't leave an organization, they leave a manager. So we would like to build a culture that ensures that we retain our staff and sustain good working relationships so that we are able to achieve our output and targets. Moving straight into outcome number one for the forthcoming financial year, current financial year, we intend on registering 25,000 domain names within the domain name space. And of course, we also want to add over and above that a 0.25% increase in terms of the growth rate. This might seem a little bit small, Chairperson, to yourself and other members. However, we are in a game of numbers. So whatever number we are able to add over and above this, be it it's a couple of thousand or hopefully a million, it actually adds in terms of the increasing of the dominion space. Mm-hmm. And speaking to our impact statement that says we want to create a vibrant dominion space. So this will show that. Moving on to outcome number two, we will be embarking on 13 awareness events, conducting 13 registrar reseller trainings. And this is, of course, if I may just pause on this one, this will mean that through this particular endeavor of training, we will empower specifically SMEs and then, of course, the designated groups to ensure that they become active players within the industry. And furthermore, Chair, through this endeavor, we will be launching a DNS practitioner program where we envisage that we will empower no less than 150 SMEs and entrepreneurs who are interested in the space with the necessary qualifications and also skill sets that will allow them to effectively partake in the industry and also add value in terms of the industry itself. Moving on, Chair, we will be conducting 14 media coverages, and this of course will be linked to the various activities that we embark on as an authority. And of course, we will be conducting three strategic partnerships, and we are hoping to leverage this to enable or activate some of the achievements or programs that I've highlighted. In closing, Chair, skipping the one of research, I'll go straight to the one of schools. We will be running a pilot of 200 public schools whereby we register dominions. And this, of course, will be in partnerships with our department, various SOEs within the department, and also some other entities within other departments to ensure that at least we reach out and what we leave is not only a domain name, not only a website, but a reusable website with platforms linked to it, whereby it will enrich the teaching and learning as much as it will give a digital identity to students and schools. Strategic outcome number three, Chair, we are going to conduct 13 internet governance activities or events. And this, of course, speaks to our mandate, which flows from the integrated ICT white paper, which says that we are the custodian of internet governance in the country. And of course, we will be coordinating these activities to put forth what internet governance is all about. And of course, this is done through multiple partnerships and multiple stakeholders as is intended in terms of internet governance. Moving on, Chair, as I mentioned earlier on, we will be defining a unique value proposition by client type and of course by the industry to open up these opportunities and to answer some of the needs required by our stakeholders. Number four, as mentioned earlier onwards, this is one of the targets flowing from the previous financial year through which we missed this target, but we are saying in this current financial year, we will see that the regulations or the framework is implemented, not only approved by the department. And with that said, we have already embarked on that journey. We have a formal project that is actually ensuring that this particular endeavor is met by the end of the financial year. And the last strategic outcome, for this current financial year, we will ensure that 80% of our audit findings, if not more, are resolved. And furthermore, we implement digital knowledge management platforms. One of the reasons behind this endeavor is, of course, other than digitizing our internal operations, is to ensure that there is no institutional memory that is lost through loss of staff, either by resignation or any other termination. The last one, Chair, as mentioned, we would hope to increase the staff satisfaction and also look at managers' satisfaction or effectiveness index. And the target there, we want to have it above 80%. Of course, as mentioned earlier onwards, we are as good as, the managers are as good as those they lead, and of course, the entity is as good as its managers. So we need to ensure that the managers need what is expected of them in the same breath, they look after the staff, and that is within the authority. Moving on, Chair. We will. I think I will do the presentation of the budget. I will only focus on the budget for this particular session, and then of course we'll address other matters to the questions from the members. For this current financial year, Chair, we are hoping to generate an income of 20,465,000, and this of course comes from the projected growth of dominiums, which is around 1,365,000 that we anticipate to register by the end of the year. And then of course our expenditure will be sitting at 19.9 million. And if the chair and members will note, there is normal, but the only significant increase is around salaries, where we hope we will attract and retain the required skill sets for us to achieve what we intend on achieving for this current financial year, and of course in terms of the strategic plan. Furthermore, Chair, we are anticipating an interest income of 948,000 rents, and this comes from the investments that we have made. And speaking true to what we have committed in the past to the committee, Chair, that we will ensure that we have adequate funds as an entity in terms of a surplus or a fallback plan to ensure that we don't go back to DCDT to ask for more money should anything could go wrong. And then of course, taking into account this particular interest, we will then be sitting at a surplus of 982,190 rand. I think looking at the time, Chair, speaking to the balance sheet, it does show that we are sitting quite comfortably, and we are showing some good positive signs in terms of our financial standing. And in conclusion, Chairperson, Zetna will continue to strengthen the regulatory control and in creating a vibrant remaining space. We will focus on our stakeholders and, of course, improving on the relationships between our members and our executive authority while we build new relationships. And then for this financial year, we hope to bring stronger alignment in terms of DCDT's strategic outcomes, and of course we will assist them in terms of achieving those objectives. Furthermore, we will advance the domain in space transformation, both from its participants and also from what is it that it can do for the country. And furthermore, we will conduct more focused community engagement, and we will empower those communities that we go into rather than just going once off and then leaving after. On that note, Chair, thank you very much, and we will wait for questions from the members.
Thank you, Dr. Zetna. We'll then go to Sita.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and members. Perhaps also my greetings to the new interim board members of CETA. I think some of them, Chair, are here. I've seen Mr. Temba Piri, an executive at CELC, also an experienced person who's been at DTG, also in the department. And Ms. Muerane, who's the chief director in the department, is also here with us, Chair. Apologies for the chairperson who is not with us, Mr. Mpoli Sitsika, a legal practitioner in the Eastern Cape and also a member of the CENTEC board. With that, Chair, if you allow me, I might give the board members, I'm not sure if they want to have a brief opening statement, and then I will summarize our presentation if they wish to say something, Chair, just for protocol. I see Mr. Piri is here, Chair.
I'm trying to check if you send it up, Mr. Piri.
Yes, Chair, I am here. Chair, greetings to you, Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee, Honorable Deputy Minister in the Presidency, and other executive members of entities, as well as acting DG. Greetings to you all. Chair, as the CETA board, we have just been appointed, and we have had preliminary meetings with the Honourable Minister. We are intending to have the overall assessment of the CETA activities in terms of the APP, as well as all governance-related matters. We have had a workshop already to induct the interim board. So we want to assure the committee that we are hitting the ground running, and we have a schedule that has been set to look into further processing matters which are statutory listed in terms of the act, in order to get the entity stabilized, as well as to streamline its governance related matters. So, Chair, the chairperson has already looked into all of these issues, which I am highlighting that we'll be looking into in the next few weeks. And we assure you, Chair, of our commitment to get the entity into a healthy state. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, then, Chair. With that, let me then, Chair, summarize the setup presentation. Taking note, Chair, that the members have already read. So the five-year strategy, Chair, that has been approved by the Minister and presented also to the Portfolio Committee. So we're still continuing with that five-year strategy. We're not really changing it. We're in the second year of implementation. So those key strategic themes that you see from digital services, which the crux of it is, what is it that CETA is doing to practically digitize government? We'll talk to that. On the infrastructure side, what is it that we are doing to ensure that there is an enabling infrastructure that allows government to be digitized? We're spending a lot of investment there. I'll take you through that, Chair. On procurement and transformation, as you will know, CETA has been blamed for corruption, procurement irregularities. What are we doing in that space, including automation of procurement process? And the other key part, your service delivery improvement side, we will talk through that to see what is it that we do, and then the enablers that are allowing the organization to continue to do that. So we still keep the strategy, Chair. I will move then to the next slide, Chair. Thanks, Tanya. So we then take that five-year strategy, Chair, into these five key programs. And I will explain what we're going to do in line with these five programs, Chair. So we will start with the first one. Next slide, Tanya. So if we start with the first one, on thought leadership and what is it that we're going to do. So we have a commitment from CETA where we are saying in this financial year, at least 8 public-facing government departments, their systems must be digitized. So practically, your public-facing department may include your home affairs, may include your normal departments that people go to. So we want to digitize their processes. It might be your social development. So we want to ensure these are integrated. You have integrated databases so that when you go to one department, you don't get asked for information that is already that you have already as a citizen submitted on another department. So CETA is investing its own money to ensure that there is an integration layer that we are making available for 8 prioritized government departments, and the ministry with the presidency will then be working on identifying those 8 priority departments that we will invest our skills and money in integrating. If we move to the next one, Chair, just highlights, I won't mention all of them. We will still ensure that CETA maintains its performance metrics as part of our radical service delivery improvements. So in spite of COVID, whether we get to third wave or anything else, we still need to ensure that we meet the performance metrics that we're going to do and provide what we call it your big data analytics tools that we are making available. For argument's sake, if you take your education had a problem in terms of releasing results for students quickly. So we've already launched in the financial year ended a big data analytics tool that now allows your higher education to be able to release results for students timely and quickly. That we've already implemented. We are now adding more departments in terms of the type of tools that we are making available for people running legacy historic solutions. So we'll add four more in this financial year. And the next slide. So in a summary here, by open innovations, what we mean is that we do not want government to only be procuring solutions that come from other countries. So we are working with National Treasury for homegrown solutions to say, how do we take homegrown South African developed solutions by SMMEs, by anyone, small enterprises, that we can take and implement them in government without necessarily your tender process type of. But we are looking at unique solutions that give an edge to government, that allows government to be able to implement this without your long triple PP type processes. So we're saying at least we should be able to identify two of those type solutions that we can roll out and implement in government working with National Treasury this year. On the next slide, what I will talk more on the bottom, because we are now talking more around government digitizing services, things being online. So your key issue then is cyber security. How do we then ensure we protect government data systems and processes? We are investing in this financial year more than 600 million on building a cyber security service presence, including an operations, a security operations center that we hope to launch within the next 2 months that we'll make available as CETA. On the next slide, you also talk about improving the network of government so that it's easier for departments to be able to ramp up their connectivity speed, to put more people to access their services remotely. So we are investing an additional 400 million on improving the systems, the network systems that manage the core network of government, not your broadband that connects the buildings, but the core network that runs government that CETA is responsible for. We are spending another 400 million on upgrading that, something that has not been maintained nor upgraded over the last 10 years. We are now doing that to prevent the risk that we see of the government network collapsing. On the next slide, you will then also see we are now talking also about the data centers. So we have these too many data centers that CETA has that are not fully utilized. So we are, one, rationalizing these data centers so that we stop having a lot of data centers that are not being properly utilized. And then the few ones then that we have, we're upgrading them into tier 3-4 type data centers so that critical data like your home affairs data, your security cluster type data can be fully protected, managed, and restored in this data center. We've already done the investment in terms of your cloud-related infrastructure inside the data centers, but the buildings themselves, in terms of properly managing them, fitting them to make sure they are fit for purpose, that's what we're going to do. It's going to cost us around 468 million rands that we're investing in doing that, starting in this financial year. And the next slide. Also then we are talking about, because in all of these things, we also need to ensure that we scale our own employees. So we are still having commitment in terms of training and skilling of our own employees. So overall, we are setting aside more than 35 million rands that talk to skills and skilling employees, including bursaries that we're making available, but also including tactical training that we're doing with our own partners. But key also is doing that in the bottom one, keep on creating an ethical culture within the organization. So as we do lifestyle audits for anyone who touches procurement, who touches money, people like me who are also in management, we are now infusing this ethical culture across the organization. So there are also programs around that in terms of our ethical culture and digital culture implementation within the organization. On the next slide. We still need to ensure that we run a profitable organization. We don't get a budget from government. We don't get a cent from government. So we still need to make sure as we do, and we're going to invest these amounts of money, we still run a profitable organization, you will see that we are projecting a relatively smaller profit margin compared to the previous financial year, simply because we're making significant investments in this year, but still we are profitable. We want to make sure we keep on collecting our money, as the committee will know. 2 years down the line, before CETA had a problem of being paid by government departments, where we're not collecting money, we're getting into red. We are now saying our bare minimum is 80% of our money we must get. So we must collect our money. We want to push that to 90% so that government starts paying us on time. So we are doing where we're doing that. Although our plan is 80%, we are, as an organization, targeting at least 90%. But the reality is we know we lose about a quarter of government departments still loading budgets, not paying us. So hence, we are budgeting at least not below an 80%. On the next slide, I'm wrapping up now, Chair. We still need to see government departments procuring through CETA. So hence, you will keep on seeing the growth in revenue. So it's not just about money. It's about we want to see, is there confidence in CETA? Are we seeing now more departments procuring services through CETA, getting services directly delivered by CETA? So we're still saying on an annual basis, we need to watch that. I can confirm, Chair, that if you just take police alone, just in the last financial year, they have spent an additional more than 500 million rands on CETA, which is a serious confidence in at least in what we're trying to do, as they are now starting to spend a little bit more with us. We have similar plans with Justice and other critical government departments in this financial year, so that working with CETA is not just on tenders. It must also be on CETA delivering services directly on its own to those departments. So that's what this talks to. On the next slide, Chair, on your procurement turnaround times, we want to keep them. We are moving them now beyond your 75% turnaround times to at least 80% of transactions from our clients must be completed. The reason we're putting that, Chair, part of the challenge is we've seen that in the last quarter of the financial year, you start getting government departments dumping money on CETA, and then you have huge amounts of transactions you have to do in the last 3 months, which build up backlogs. We are now, this financial year, already started processes where we are communicating with accounting officers, DGs, to say at least before end of this month, May, start giving us your demand plans. What is it that you want to procure? So that CETA can rationalize what everybody wants to buy and buy it once, use economies of scale so that there are better savings to government. But also it means we stop going on the market buying the same thing 100 times. We can just go once. There can be efficiencies in the process that we're going to do. So those are what these reforms are talking to, including transversal contracts, more that we're creating. Those things are just making it agile and easier for departments to procure through us. Included in this are the automation of our procurement processes, which we have started already, Chair. I can confirm just on one tender, we had more than 1,300 bidders submitting their bids all online. And the whole process was managed online and awarded the process online. So at least we are happy now. We do have the technical capability to do that. Is now to launch it large scale in this financial year. On the next slide, of course, on your SMME procurement, at least we're happy now. We are still meeting our 40%. We've done more than 40% in the past financial year. We are still seeing keep acquisition spend through SMME. So if you link this, Chair, with the localization, we want to do more. We don't just want to focus on 40% that must be given to black SMMEs and others. We also want to see locally developed solutions also being on the market, which is what we're working on with Treasury. On the next slide, maybe to summarize on the finances. On the finances, yes, you still see a revenue growth that we are still projecting for the financial year, and also the services or the agency revenue, we are projecting for that to increase as we manage the financial year. But I guess more important is the next slide, that we will, that the next one, if you skip this one. So that's why we are explaining, Chair, on this one, the 2 billion that we will be investing in the next 4 financial years, starting with at least a half a billion we're investing in this year. So if we're able to collect our monies beyond the 80%, we hit 90%, then we're able to invest at least up to 800 million in this financial year, which allows us to finish the infrastructure refurbishment investment that we need to do. But as you will see on our cash and cash equivalents, as we invest, we are still ensuring that the organization is financially viable, because the shareholder is not giving us any money for this investment. So all of these investments we have to pay for using CETA's own cash, operating cash, and we are not budgeting for any possible money, be it a repurposing budget or any other once-off discretionary budget we'll get from government. So hence, we want to make the balance, invest, but at the same time, make sure we don't get the organization to fall financially. So we're trying to maintain that balance. Let me stop here, Chair. We will answer the questions as and when members have. Thank you, Chair, and the honorable members.
Thank you, Sita. I take it back from the board members. You are satisfied with that, that we can then move to the next presentation. Okay, I take it then that the satisfaction in that regard. Would now move to GCIS, which would be followed by the MDTA. And I'm now going to recognize Deputy Minister as the political leader now leading. Introduce.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Let me greet members of the Portfolio Committee. It's always beautiful to come in and report or update the Portfolio Committee in relation to the work that we do and so on. In relation to GCIS, Chair, and committee members, let me also greet members of various departments who are here, CETA, the Department of Communication and Digital Technologies, colleagues from MDDA and GCIS, and our advisors who are here in the presidency. We've got two. Good morning. Just on a highlight, Chair, is that one, the DG of GCIS, she can't join us because she is in cabinet. There's cabinet which is taking place, and then Mr. Karim will take us through in relation to GCIS, and then Ms. Zukiswa Boja will take us in relation to the MDDA. Let me not go into the details of it. Let them present, and then after that, we'll be able to interact and answer questions and so on. Thanks.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, the Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee, and greetings to Deputy Minister Sawaya. As Deputy Minister said, Chair, it is a very great honor, as always, with CETA, to be before you and to share with you our plans. I can say in a nutshell, on behalf of Sis Pumla, we're feeling very upbeat for the 21-22 year, Honourable Chair. I'm joined here today by my esteemed colleague, Tyrone Seal. I'm sure he needs no introduction, but Honourable Members, I do want to tarry with two introductions for yourselves. Sobisa Zotwe, our new CFO, is with us today, and Nonkosi Peter. Colleagues, these two chief directors have joined the ranks of GCIS, and we're very proud of their track record to date. And I'm sure you'll see later today a bit from them. I'm also joined by Sandile Nene and Zandile Mgadi, my colleagues who deal with our entities, and Dolores Mokotloa from the DG's office is with us as well. Colleagues, I really want to just move to the first slide and indicate, firstly, as we go there, Nomkosi is going to drive for us. We are not going to tarry long, Honourable Chair, on issues of the corporate structure of the department. We haven't had major changes in there. As we do that, I do want to greet all the group of colleagues here, particularly my sister, Mr. O'Donnell at the department, our sister department and her team, Very nice to be with you all again. So we haven't had any changes on our constitutional mandate or our legislative mandate. It is, as honourable members have been able to see in the preparatory meeting. We very, very capably and blessed, in fact, to be led with two great strategic leaders. We have the privilege of having Ms. Kumbuto Ntshavheni as our acting minister, and we have a very, very strong leadership from her and Deputy Minister Sawyer to be in the point that we are in fulfilling our mandate of providing the public with information that they can use to empower and better their lives. Now, that we call developmental communication. So in terms of our strategic leadership, our guidance, we're very privileged to have Mr. Kumbuto hands on with us, with the DM, and we're finding ourselves in a place where we are really able to harness that leadership as we move into the delivery of our policy mandate. So at this point in time, we have a very strong approved five-year national communications strategic framework, which Cabinet approved last year, guiding the work. I'll touch on that in a minute. We are really starting to see traction with the implementation of the national communication policy, which Cabinet approved a few years back. The strategic priorities of the city administration in terms of the focus areas remain our mantra and remain our guiding focal area in terms of the priorities we're pursuing. And I'll touch a bit on that later. The National Development Plan in terms of the 2030 vision and the type of society we want to see remains our overarching framework. And we've been placing very special emphasis on the Economic Reconstruction Recovery Program. I do hope that, for example, Honourable Members, Chair, maybe you caught sight this week of the poultry masterclass that we had with Agriculture and the DTI and other colleagues. We were overwhelmed with the poultry masterclass. As you know, the poultry plan is one of the focal areas of the ERRP. We had over 1,000 representatives logging into the webinar, Honourable Maneli. 1,000 people participated in that webinar. So we're feeling quite upbeat, as I said, about our plans for profiling economic opportunities in 21-22. I'm not going to tarry here on the strategic focus. There's been no change on our vision and mission for 21-22. So here, a little bit of emphasis. And since Puma is very passionate about these strategic areas, Deputy Minister, so I'd like to just touch on a bit. As I indicated, the seven priorities of the sixth administration remain the guiding leitmotif for all work of government communication, particularly the central coordination role of GCIS. We are doing this within a framework of tightening quite extensively our ability to monitor and measure, Honourable Chair, the work of government communication across the three spheres of government, and also the ability to coordinate very strategically the message and the work of government communication intergovernmentally. For example, on Monday this week, we had a sitting of the Intergovernmental Communication Forum. That's one of the platforms that we use to do that coordination. That includes all nine offices of Premier, SALGA in the province, COGTA in the province, as well as District Communication Forum chairpersons. Last year, we really had a good run with the media. We have developed very, very good seamless working relationships with the media in terms of changes that the media landscape has undertaken, but also curveballs that are handed to us by the COVID pandemic, and I'll touch on that a bit later, and both the pandemics of gender-based violence and femicide, as well as anti-corruption, the fight against corruption that we are doing in tandem with the justice cluster remains two of our main priorities. So just for the year ahead, we have a couple of things. We are in the second year, as I've indicated, of our annual plan as part of the five-year strategic plan. I've indicated the priorities. Obviously, communication on COVID-19 remains at the forefront of our horizon. As I indicated on the previous slide, technological adjustments in how we do our work have meant that the government communication system has not only harnessed things like virtual meetings, drone loud hailing in communities, but has actually begun to perfect it. And you know, Honourable Members, as I shared with you last year, we have sustained and seen the uptake in the attendance of all these coordination structures across government through the technology element. Very pleased to say that we are doing very well in terms of the functionality of the
coordination machinery, particularly at district level. Dr. Ramakgopa, as you know, has been placing a lot of emphasis on the strengthening of the district development model, and we're very proud, honourable members, to say to you today that the impetus of championship level at district in terms of service and planning has led to enhanced coordination of communication and strategy around that. Relationships with the media, both here and particularly on the continent and abroad, we've strengthened, we've made very strong relationships with media houses, organized media formations, Africa Press Clubs, etc. And we're planning to tighten that in the year ahead on the previous year's foundation. Progress has been made to finish the MAC Council Charter and to appoint the members to there. And we will be playing a lot of oversight to the MDDA and Brand SA. The DG has already begun with the Deputy Minister intensive engagements with both entities, and Suzuki will elaborate later. And we'll continue to provide services to our national colleagues across the board, whether that be media briefings, strategy development, procurement of media buying, and we'll keep up a very high green flag in those areas in 21-22. There's a structure of the department. We have the three branches. We still have three acting deputy director generals, but major progress was made at the end of the year at the executive level. Sadly, honourable members, I'm sure you all know, the tragic passing of Jackson Kimball, our beloved minister, did put a bit of a spoke in that, but the process is well on track under the leadership of the acting minister and the DM. Colleagues in branch one can comment, our vacancy level is only at 8%, which is within the 10% threshold. Of these 430, of these outstanding posts of 38, most of them are going to be filled by the end of, I think it's the end of June, because we've been doing intense series of interviews for that. I'm not going to start to touch your mouth. I'm sure honourable members can ask if they wish. Now, I'm going to ask Nomkhonsi Peter, just very briefly, honourable members. She's the head of the strategic planning team. We did apply our minds this year, honourable members, to look at outcomes that are more focused, more measurable, and to tighten the old outcomes from 9 down to 5. So I'm just going to ask Nomkhonsi to very briefly touch on our thinking around that. Nomkhonsi?
Michael, good morning, honourable members. The 2021-22 strategic planning cycle afforded the GCIS an opportunity to review its outcomes. The strategic plan that was approved in March 2020 defined 9 outcomes for the GCIS, and these have been refined and streamlined to the current 5. Most of the changes related to ensuring that there was alignment across the 3 branches, and that the outcomes were reflective of the entire organization and were not branch specific, but that each branch was able to define outcome indicators that would then reflect their contribution to the broader organizational outcomes. Based on that exercise, we have 5 outcomes for the GCIS for the remainder of the strategic plan term, and these 5 outcomes are sound corporate governance, which would also include human matters related to the oversight of the entities that report to the presidency through the GCIS, an informed and empowered citizenry, which forms the core focus of the mandate of the department and directly contributes to the impact of an informed and empowered citizenry for South Africa, as well as a well-functioning communication, government communication machinery. Thirdly, is transformation, particularly in relation to mainstream print, digital media, advertising, as well as community media. And the key output here would be the establishment of the MAC Council, as well as the subsequent transformation reports that will be published starting from the current financial year. The DDT, Karen, has already spoken about the relations with the media, and this is an outcome that will continue to be measured going forward. And finally, in line with the National Communication Strategic Framework, as well as the National Communication Policy, greater emphasis will be placed on ensuring that the GCIS is impactful and drives a well-functioning government communication system that is not only reactive, but that is increasingly proactive in ensuring that government programs are profiled and that the citizenry is well informed. Thank you.
Thank you, Nomkhonsi. Now, as we move along, honourable chair and members, let's move along, please, Ms. Peter. So, obviously, the biggest business in town is COVID-19 pandemic, and I must say to honourable members, as we enter program one, we have a very comprehensive communications plan and framework in place that has been driven at the level of interdepartmental working committee that meets three times a week, communication structure. We also have that work is reported to the Interministerial Committee on Vaccinations, which is chaired by the Honourable Deputy President of the Republic, Mr. Mabuza, and then also on a fortnightly or irregular, as per the plan, on a basis to the National Coronavirus Command Council prepared by the President. And that's a very comprehensive wall-to-wall plan in terms of reaching right across the country. Obviously, the emphasis at this point in time is on the matter of vaccination uptake of the EVDS and persuading older folks that the vaccination is the way to go. But Thobisa Totsi is our CFO, but she's standing for Branch 1 today. So Thobisa, if you could just quickly take honourable members to Branch 1, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. Good morning, honourable members. For Program 1, we have three strategic outcomes that we are looking at, which is the unqualified audit opinion obtained for the current financial year. And we also have a vacancy rate of 10%, and actually we are currently sitting at 8%. And as Michael said, most of the posts will be filled by the end of June and the others by the end of August. And also lastly, we've added the four governance reports relating to the availability of IT infrastructure, as well as systems presented to the audit committee. This one is also relating to ensuring that GCIS, we are agile and also we are conforming to the fourth industrial revolution, as we have seen during the pandemic, that as government, we had to make sure that we are live to the new way of doing things in terms of ensuring that we are virtual and also we are working in a hybrid mode. So that those are the three outcomes for Program 1. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Toby. Mr. Tyrone Seal, Branch 2, briefly, please. Mr. Seal, are you there, Tyrone? I think perhaps you are muted. I know you are with us. Can't hear you. Nonkosi, let's do this. Let's go to program 3 quickly. I'll present program 3. We'll come back to program 2 for purpose of time. So Honourable Chair, while Mr. Seal works on sound or whatever connectivity challenge he's having, the program that I'm tasked with responsibility for, we feel very upbeat about 21-22. We will continue with the mandate of implementing developmental communication through both the mediated means, in other words, our very strong relationships with the media, with stakeholders, etc., and with unmediated ones, where we go directly into communities to foster these partnerships. And I think honourable members have shared with me in the past the fact that the plethora of social partners, whether these be Horshi, whether these be faith structures, etc., remain very, very strong partners in this work. So, for our first area of improved relations with the media, we're looking at the regular structured engagements to happen. I mean, those engagements, we often call them editorial briefs, where we sit down with the leadership of the media and prepare them, bring them on board for work that's going to come, whether it's a key program or something along the lines of bringing media to take ownership and understand things so that reporting happens without any errors of communication on our part or misunderstandings on the part of the media. The post-cabinet work remains very highly focused by a partnership led by our minister. The acting minister has been very passionate about the post-cabinet meeting. She then fields numerous media interviews after the cabinet's honourable members, and the DG is focusing her efforts on ensuring that community media are briefed on the outcomes of the cabinet. And we remain the centre house for media briefings, both here and with our link in Cape Town, in the Visa Centre. So we aim this year to reach 100% service to any department that asks us. So obviously if two ask at the same time, our job is to realign them, to try and re-coordinate the stock. Let's move on. The other area, obviously, is the well-functioning system, as Tolisa mentioned as well. We cannot do this alone. We regard ourselves still and fundamentally as a system that operates wide and far. I can give honourable members a case study. I was very impressed, honourable members, I must tell you, when we sat with the IGCF, the Intergovernmental Forum on Monday, all nine provincial teams were on board, and we were very impressed with the depth and the character of the communication work that they're doing now around registration of older folks over 60 on EBDS. So we're feeling confident that through the engagements, we're going to have two formal ones of the GCF, 10 sittings of the Intergovernmental Communication Forum, and including the progress we've made that we're going to build on training government communicators in a range of areas of work in the next year, we'll be fine. We have made a very strong partnership with the National School of Government in solidifying the training area. As honourable members will recall, the five clusters have developed five-year strategies, and we've made very solid progress in the 21-22 year already in ensuring that each cluster has a communication program for the 21-22 year. Let's move on quickly. And then obviously our information to the public is the most critical area. We plan 1,140 direct developmental communication activations. These can be taxi rank activations, door-to-door campaigns. Obviously, honourable members, we are very mindful of the COVID regulations, and all our teams have proper protective equipment and execute these in line with COVID level one regulations. I was very chuffed to say it earlier, and it's very true, and the Deputy Minister may even testify as she was honoured us with her presence in the pilot, where we're using drones now to start doing loud hailing, message announcements, etc. 119 marketing events planned for the year ahead for the Chisholm centres that are functioning. Some obviously have had to be delisted by their provincial governments due to lack of functionality, but we will continue with the National Department to market those that are there. We will continue with our community engagements to deliver on that. We're not a one-way communication system. We are a two-way communication system. So when we interact with communities to stakeholder engagements, we listen, we hear, we feedback. We have 45 copies of the editions of my district today, which go out every Friday. And once a quarter, we provide to our leadership a comprehensive report of the function of the government communication system. Let's go to the last slide. Okay, that's the budget. So can we just check, Mr. Seale, are you with us now, Tyrone? Okay, let's go back to branch two. I'll take honourable members through that quickly. I'm very sorry, honourable members, I don't quite know what's happened to my colleague. Perhaps he's been called aside. Obviously, the Bookers and Zella newspaper, 15.3 million copies for this year, remains our flagship production for branch two. We have a very strong online presence of this as well, so that we are enabling wider audience reach. The Public Service Magazine, 11 online editions that are planned, we have made them online because the types of reader for these are quite accessible online. The South African Yearbook is online again, and that's a national repository that is very widely used at both domestic and international level on the character, the details, the information of our country. And that is a flagship project that we invest a lot of time, leadership time, information gathering time. We have a product called the Official Guide to South Africa, which is it's a synopsis, it's an extract from the annual yearbook, where we make a very user-friendly edition. And I'm sure honourable members have used it at their pleasure, I hope, and a large number of audiences are able to do that. So we work under that strategic area. In the area of language services, we're endeavouring to make sure that any request for language service translation or language service support, we give that. The key government programs and activities, we have daily news updates. We're very, very chuffed with the work that's been done through our radio unit. We continue to provide these daily news updates as part of the news bulletins. Including the very update management of all the government websites and our social media accounts. Let's move on, please. The Research reports on public mood assessments, the narrative, the tone of government are very well received, honourable members, by the Directors General clusters of government. Twice a year, we present a report to each of the DG clusters, which sets the tone, and we receive these very well, because sometimes they point out blind spots to the Directors General, which can form part of revision. We have really started, as I mentioned in my introductory comments, to make sure that we monitor and evaluate what we do. We don't just shoot out information. Obviously, honourable members, we do continue with the research through Tracker and those products, but we've made major progress in the GSET instrument, where we actually are able to send out an instrument that we've developed to heads of communication for completion, and we do an assessment for them on the impact that they've had with their various platforms and products. I'm not going to touch on the analysis report, because that's what we mentioned earlier. Right throughout the pandemic, and I'm sure honourable members may have seen, we kept updating, revising, tweaking, correcting any incorrect messaging that passed in the public domain, obviously in partnership with the Department of Health, but we are doing that messaging still as a very important piece of our work, and we are also continuing very successfully with the op-ed series. And I think as we move to the next slide, which I think could be the last, I just want to share with honourable members that we've made significant progress in reaching African news agencies and platforms across the continent for the placement of South African government opinion editorials, very often by our ministers, but very often by our Director General. Honourable members, I'm not going to take your time on these ones. You know these are the baskets of services we offer, from photographic and video services, radio productions, and these are the targets we set for our year ahead. Just to check as a one guy, just on that last slide, Honourable Chair Manetti, I just want to say that one of the things that we're feeling very proud of, and I'd like to draw to the attention of the honourable members at our close, we do have excellent work being done on documenting successful case studies of particularly young people in the economic recovery program. That's really available in a big repository to build that narrative of hope and share proudly young people who are doing great work. Last slide, if I can just ask our CFO to show you the situation of our finances. Minister, if you could just quickly give us the last bit about our money. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. Good morning again. In terms of our budget allocation for the 2021-2022 financial year, GCIS were allocated 749.7 million. And in terms of the allocation share, Program 1, which is administration share, 176 million. And Program 2, which is content processing and dissemination share, 449. Of the 449, 246 belongs to the two entities, which is MDPA and Brand SA, and then Program 3 share 124.7 million. If you look in terms of the sharing, I think there was an error where we said admin was 176 million. And if you look at Program 2, they are sharing most of the budget in terms of 149 million, whereby they also include the entities, as I've indicated, 50% of the budget for Program 2 is for the entities, and Program 3 is sharing 124.7 million. As much as that, we have seen an increase in terms of our allocation. We also had budget cuts from the Treasury in terms of our COE, our goods and services, as well as also on the capital assets. The only increase that we have seen is on the transfers and subsidies, which is the monies that are transferred to the two entities. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, colleagues. Honourable Chair, honourable members, honourable Deputy Minister, that's it from GCIS for 21-22. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, GCIS. I'm sure MDA is ready. That's the last presentation, and then we'll engage from this point.
Yes, Chair, let MDDA present.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. Greetings to the Chairperson of the Committee, the Honourable Members, and the Deputy Minister. And also, let me extend greetings to the team at the NDDA and the rest of the colleagues from our other sister entities. Thank you so much, Chair. Honourable Chairperson, I am here today on behalf of the Chairperson who could not join us today. The CEO will take us through the presentation. However, I think just as an opening remark, I think we come here today being a very satisfied entity. In terms of our governance engine, I think we are doing very well with the indicator that perhaps all our governance structures are in place and they are working, so the organization is really stabilized. And that is an indication that we're doing things right. We are cleaning up our governance. I think the clean audit that we got, we do pray, and we do, as we are being currently audited, we do pray that we will not have a regression in terms of we will maintain that clean bill of health that we have. And I think also, whilst all that is going well, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, we remain with the challenge for our clients. In terms of the transmission costs, that we do not have enough funding, adequate funding to assist our clients with those transmission costs, and the big Sentech debt that is still an issue. However, I think then the entity is on the right track. We are making strides in achieving our mandate. So the CEO will take us through the presentation for the 2021 APP, as well as the funding. Thank you so much, CEO.
Thank you so much, board member Andiswa Ngwana. Good morning, honourable members, honourable chair, Mr. Maneli, honourable deputy minister Siweya, and the honourable members of the portfolio committee, the DGs of the departments represented here, my colleagues at the GCIS, and the board members, that the two board members that represent the MDDA board, Ms. Ngwana and Ms. Zanele Mgadi, and my colleagues at the MDDA. Good morning, Chairperson. Given that we've got 15 minutes, and I always struggle with 15 minutes. I'm going to focus on slides that we think we would like to emphasize as the MDDA, as the member of the board has said. This is the 2021-2022 APP, which is a continuation of the strategic plan that we tabled after the national general election, working towards the MTSF period. Our mandate is derived from Section 16 and Section 32 and Section 15 of the Constitution, where the access to right to access to information is guaranteed, and where the freedom of expression is also guaranteed. This is just the mandate of the MDDA. It's derived from Section 3 of the Act, MDDA Act, where we encourage ownership of and access to media by historically diminished groups, as well as by historically diminished indigenous language. I think for us, we pride ourselves for ensuring that there's plurality of voices, and that the people in rural areas are able to be spoken with and communicated with, and that they receive information in the languages that they speak and they understand. This is the framework, legislative framework within which we operate. And of course, the Constitution is the solemn one, and we then operate within all these other legislations. We also are aligned to the 2030 vision, the NDP Priority 6, capable building a capable, ethical, and developmental state. And then Priority 1, which is economic transformation and job creation, where we assist community and small commercial media with job creation in terms of paying for the salaries and paying for stipends for those youth that join the projects that we fund. Social cohesion is a key characteristic of the media. Honorable members, you will see throughout the presentation that in our vision, and you will see a key word coming through, which is sustainable or sustainability. We've added it on our vision, and we've added it on our impact statement, an accessible, transformed, diversified, and sustainable media, because we believe that now that the media has been, community media and small commercial media have been developed to a large extent or to a large degree, we believe that ours is to now sustain them so that they don't perish in front of our eyes. The MDDA is implemented through this program structure, honorable members. It is led by a shareholder minister in the presidency, and we now have got currently an acting minister with the deputy minister in that office. We've got a board, and the act stipulates that the MDDA only acts through the board, and then there's the executive, and my two colleagues are here, Mr. Mzubukile Kashe, who heads up the core business, and I've got the CFO, Mr. Yasin Asmar, who will take us through the finances. And we also then have the five programs, key programs, that the entity implements the APP through. Program one is the governance one. Program two is the core business one, which is headed up by Mzubukile Kashe. Program three is partnerships, public awareness. So it's your it's your communication, stakeholder management, lobbying also happens there. Advocacy happens there. Program four is capacity building. It's led by one person with program five. It's capacity building of the sector. And program five is innovation and research. This is the entire complement of the MDDA. The MDDA has got 41 staff members, including myself, and 40 positions have been filled. We just have got someone who's currently serving notice on the 40th position, and we are currently advertising the risk specialist post, which is the only position that has not been filled. These are the top risks as we have them. And fraud for us and corruption, we take it very seriously. As a result, we actually managed to outsource the hotline last year so that there is credibility to it, and that the sector can trust it. And because we know that risk number one is really, really inherent to the business that the MDDA does. When you deal with money, you will encounter some incidents of fraud, corruption, and theft. Non-compliant projects approved by the board. We're hoping that this is going to be a thing of the past, because in 2019 we got approved a grant funding policy, and we've got other processes and mechanisms we put in place, including
Me too, I also can't hear.
I thought it's on my side because I'm struggling to even unmute.
No, all of us check.
Okay. Let's just check the connection.
I lost connection. I'm back, Che.
Okay. Yes, you can proceed.
I apologize. I actually lost connection there for some reason. I don't know, but I came back very quickly. So I will proceed. So I'm not going to deal with the key highlights. I think we were trying to break here, but in the interest of time, I think I'll just mention the two.
Thank you.
hear that there is a problem, honourable members, and I said, unless it's on also on my side, I'm struggling to get to a MDDA presentation.
No, she's out, actually. At all, yes.
Yeah, but I do see on the platform that's a thing as co-host. But
I'm back, Honourable Maneli. I think one of my colleagues must be on standby. I'm not sure what's happening. All the time when I was not presenting, this was fine, and now I'm presenting, and now it's doing this to me. This is the 20 million that the board approved, and it was 16.2 million was dispersed to this project. I'm just gonna fly through this so that I can get to the actual APP. These are still key highlights. In terms of our five-year goals, which started when we tabled our APP, goal one is the capable, effective, and ethical organization in support of delivery of the mandate. Goal two is the diverse, sustainable, community-based media. Goal three is compliance and impact of MDDA grant support monitored, which is the M&E part. And goal four is the capacitated digital responsive community media, which is the research and development is happening there. And so in terms of this slide summarizes what we are going to do in terms of the APP. And I think I would like to also then talk briefly about the fact that we've got a KPA that deals with sustainability models. And we are saying that in that KPA, these are the pillars of the sustainability model. We are in a process of appointing a service provider which will conduct a research for about 8-9 months, and we will interact with the results thereafter. But we're focusing on these pillars: technology, digital innovation and signal distribution, corporate governance and compliance, content generation and so forth, because we realize that there's just so much that is needed in order for a community media broadcaster or print or digital to be sustainable. So we want to build something that at least we can then resource it and mobilize funding around it so that we can capacitate and empower these entities to sustain. These are our targets and indicators. I'm just going to fly through them. This is program one: ensure effective leadership, strategic management and operations. In terms of the indicators here, we're still wanting to retain our unqualified audits. We want to implement the fraud prevention and risk management strategies. And we would also want to process all compliant invoices within 30 days. And I've asked the CFO to actually make sure that this gets reduced over the next few years to at least 15 days, because the late minister said the DPME is able to do it in 15 days. In terms of stealing in program one, we don't want to incur any new irregular expenditure, and we don't want we also want to automate, or we will automate business processes. We started doing that last year. Human resource strategy, which I think is another big thing, it's got its own pillars: succession planning, change management. Honourable members, you would know where the MDDA comes from. So all these things for us are to build a credible organisation and an organisation of choice. So the HR strategy has already been approved by the board last month, and we are in a process of implementing it. Employment equity. And then in terms of program two, which is the core business, here we facilitate ownership, control and access to information by historically disadvantaged groups. And in terms of the indicators here, the number of grant funding applications for community broadcast projects approved by the board, and similarly applications for funding small commercial and digital print approved by the board. A number of media projects provided for with digital support, and we are engaging with organizations like Facebook South Africa already and other organizations in terms of implementing that. Program two, but sub-program monitoring and evaluation. Honorable members always say to us, you must follow the money. This is where we follow the money, honorable members, where we conduct M&E visits, and we check that the people are using or the project are implementing the fund grant, the grant, in a manner that is stipulated for in the granting aid in the granting aid contract. And we will also be conducting an evaluation report on the impact of the MDDA. The MDDA is turning 20 in January 2023, and we're hoping that next year we'll also do a quick survey. Not a quick survey, but we'll also, in tandem with the sustainability model, also check how impactful the mandate of the MDDA has been in the past 20 years. Program three, which is partnership, public awareness and advocacy. I've already said that the lobbying for more support and engaging more partners and looking for potential donors that happens in this program. And in this year, we're saying that we will actually have 12 number of stakeholder engagements and media engagements. So we're wanting to put out a good word on the MDDA in cultivating the soil in order for us to be able to go and lobby for funding. Number of proposals for funding and support presented to potential and existing stakeholders. We've started doing that, and we will do more of that in order for us to be able to resource the sustainability model. This is the second last program, which is capacity building of the sector. We're saying that we will do a number of training interventions aimed at capacitating the sector, and a number of you will do one media literacy workshop. This is part of the MDDA mandate that was not very active, and we're saying let's just do one, and then we can plan others better in the next few years. Culture of Reading, one initiative as well. This is the last program, honorable members. It's Innovation, Research and Development, which is to champion research, development and innovation. And in terms of the indicators there, we're seeing number of research projects funded on key trends or developments impacting on community media sector, and this means that we can do an impact a survey on the impact of COVID or GBV or anything that we think impacts on the key trends or issues on the development of the community media. And the sustainability model can be seen here, and as I've already said, that we are in a process of appointing a service provider. In fact, this is the only target in terms of appointing the service provider that could not be achieved in our APP in the 2020-21 financial year, because we just could not get suitable to evaluate. And then in terms of the staff establishment, I've already said that our establishment complement is 41, 40 is filled, which means it's 97% that is filled, one vacancy, which is 2.5 vacancy rate. We've got no fixed term or seconded staff at this point. In terms of executive committee, it's 4 approved positions and 4 filled. As I've said, there's just one person who's serving notice in another organization to join us on the 1st of July. The management is 10 and 10 are filled. And I think I must say that in terms of the executive, it will be a 50-50 gender split. Honorable members, we made sure of that. And this is just how the employment equity looks like in the organization. We are mindful of the areas where we are lagging behind. For instance, females, and for instance, but the disability target has been achieved so far. Colors, we're still lagging behind. And I think from the resignation, because of the retirement of Cheryl Lambridge, who was a communications manager at the end of February, we then back to square one in terms of the whites. I think I went back. I'm going to, at this point, ask the CFO to please go through quickly through the MDDA budget. Thank you. Over to you, CFO.
Good morning, Chair, Deputy Minister, members and colleagues. Chair, I'm going to try and do this quite briefly. As a result of the COVID, Chair, we looked at the impact of broadcast funders. Our grants income has been reduced with regards to the cuts that came through from Treasury. Our broadcast funders also, because they are reliant on revenue in terms of the USAF levies that they pay us, Chair, we've considered the impact and we've kept our funding from them to a minimum. In terms of the other incomes, Chair, the interest rate, as we know, the interest rate has gone down significantly in the prior year. Our funds are invested with the corporate account at the Reserve Bank, and thus we try and get the most optimal rates. Last year, in the current financial year, we've considered all of the impacts of COVID, and we are predominantly dependent on our funding from external funders. Thus, we'll be noticed that the budget is not so significantly changed. In terms of other areas of work, the expenditure cost the funds that led to disbursements for grants. We talked to employee cost share. The CEO has spoken to the fact that it will be a fully functioning team with all positions now filled, with the exception of one position that should be advertised in the next couple of months. And we're looking at obviously reducing administrative costs in line with the grants reduction share. And also in terms of the fact that we are working on a hybrid system here, we're looking at reducing those costs here. I thank you, Chair and members. Over to you, CEO.
Thank you, CFO. This is the last slide, and I'm not going to belabor the point. I think the MDDA spoke to the transformation of the charter, of the media charter, and we are also in a process of, in fact, it's also led by the GCIS, the amendment bill of the MDDA Act amendment. Those are the two legislations that I think will impact us moving forward. In terms of sustainability, I've already said that we're hoping that we can get this company to come and do the research this year, so that by next year we can pilot and we can launch the sustainability, which would have piloted by January 2023 when we turn 20 years. But I am by no means saying that the sustainability process must wait for 2023. I'm just saying officially we will launch it at that date, but we would have piloted it hopefully for another 6 months. 20 years of the MGTA review at the time when we launched the sustainability model, and we shall also have done the impact study on the mandate of the MDDA. The member of the board also talk about the issue of the mitigating high signal transmission costs. I think it is an issue that I think government and all relevant parties must look at. The sector is really struggling, is overwhelmed by this cost. We're sitting at around 80 million plus debt to date. And I am by no means saying that it is an MDDA debt, but it is a debt that confronts all of us. In terms of sectoral digital presence, we've got a digital migration strategy and a clear plan that has been approved by the board. And we also did the sector audit needs. And so we will be implementing that again with other partners. For instance, we've already submitted a comprehensive proposal to the MICT CETA for them to either co-fund or to assist us to fund the program, training programs for the sector. And I think I would like to end it there, Chair. Thank you very much. And I apologize for the disruptions of my internet. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, MDDA. I'm not sure if Deputy Minister would want to close any gap. Otherwise, I would want to give portfolio members to engage. DM?
I'm fine. I'm okay.
You're fine. Okay.
Yeah, I'm fine. Yes, I'm fine. Thanks.
Honorable members, we are now back to a point of engagement. I would be recognizing hands. You can speak to any of the presentations as we usually do, and the department and the entities will then take notes so that at the time of responding, they will respond in the order that they presented. That would help facilitate the meeting better. Hajira, you'd assist me if I can't see members raising their hands on this side.
Mr. Mackenzie's hand and Mr. Bella's hand are up. Thank you.
Okay. Honorable Kumbuya, I saw that one, but I was just checking if there are other names.
Ms. Kupeka also.
Okay. Honorable Kumbu, Honorable Mackenzie, Honorable Mbele, then Honorable Kubeka, in that order for now, in case I would have left any other hand. Otherwise, Honorable Kubeka, you are last in the hands that I've noted. Honorable Kumbu, followed by Honorable Mackenzie. So I now recognize you to speak, Honorable Kumba. Honorable Kumbo?
Chair? Oh, I've muted myself. Thank you, Chair, and greetings to everyone in the meeting. Firstly, I would like to welcome all the presentations made. Just one thing on CETA's presentation, Chairperson. If they can just elaborate further on the strategy of collecting the money that is owed to them by the government department, as I am not that clear as to how they are going to compel this government department to pay them. Secondly, on GCIS. On GCIS, Chair, I just want to check the level of readiness on COVID-19 in case the country experienced the third wave. I think for now, Chair, those are my two questions. And I thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Kumbo. I now recognize Honorable McKenzie. Honorable McKenzie.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning to you. Good morning to the Minister and the colleagues. It's nice to see you all this morning. Chairperson, in terms of Dot Zadner, the KPI that was missed was the development of a register or registry framework. Now, I would imagine this is probably your most important, and please correct me if I'm wrong, your most important KPI, because that speaks to the core mandate of what you do, which is registering and maintaining domain names for the .za domain name space. So can you tell me why you haven't achieved that? And perhaps you could just confirm my first point for me. Why you haven't achieved that? Because it does speak directly to your core mandate. So if you could just unpack what it is, and then are you using internal or external capacity to develop this register? And if you're using an external company, can you tell us who that is, please? Then in terms of your KPI around empowered communities and the awareness events that you hold, can you tell me whether you hold any of these online? And I'm just thinking in terms of the third wave of COVID coming down the line, because clearly whenever we're looking at any of these APPs, that should always be sitting in the back of our mind. What can we do if this third wave hits? We go into an extreme lockdown. Can we still continue our business? And what plans can we put in place to make sure that happens? Get back to the question, do you hold any of your awareness events online? And I'd just like to single you out for a bit of praise here on your program in public schools and public school domains. I think for each school to have a website full of color and activity and vibrancy that showcases what the school does is the same as wearing a school uniform. It gives you a sense of pride and a sense of belonging in the institution at which you're being educated. So I'd like to congratulate the work that you're doing in that area. In terms of your training material, do you develop your own training material or do you outsource that? And is there any collaboration between yourself and other SOEs, and I'm thinking specifically of NAMESA here, for example, in developing that material? Then, just as a fourth question, last question, there's a line item in your budget, professional, and it's 1.8 million. If you could just unpack what that expense item is for me, please. Thank you. Then on to CETA. Thank you very much for the presentation, and it's abundantly clear after spending years dealing with your entity that you really are making great strides. And I think that half a billion rand of water from the South African police is indicative of the excellence of the kind of work you're supposed to deliver. Can you just tell me, I know your relationship with Home Affairs was fraught. So much so that we had a joint committee meeting where they really laid into you. Can you tell me what that relationship is looking like with Home Affairs? What's your uptime ratios looking like? your SLAs, are you meeting those? And then also in terms of Home Affairs specifically, are you developing or encouraging Home Affairs to develop any new apps for online applications? For example, if you know now you can get your ID and your passport, you can go online, apply for those and book an appointment. But if you try and get an unabridged marriage certificate, for example, you really still have to jump through physical hoops. So just in terms of developing online applications and apps for those sides of Home Affairs. Are you doing any work in that area? Thank you, I'm done with CETA. Then GCIS, and just to build on Honourable Bumbu, any preparations for a third wave that you're making and contingency plans for that? And then Mark, if through you, Chairperson, you used the word chuffed twice. Can I suggest that it's Victorian English, in fact, early English, it's Chaucerian English. If I can suggest you go and look at what chuffed actually means, you might be surprised, but certainly you'd be pleased. And then I noticed one of the presenters in when we used the terms HDIs, used the word diminished instead of disadvantaged. And arguably, you know, you could say historically disadvantaged individuals were diminished by apartheid and colonialism, and yes, they were. So, I mean, you could use that word. From what I understand, it is disadvantaged. I'm done on GCIS, and it's very important to use the right words for government communications information service. Chairperson, those are my questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Mackenzie. I now recognise Honourable Mpele. Honourable Mpele. Please proceed.
Enkosi Sizwe, and let me greet everyone on the platform and say thank you for the presentations. I have a question for each of the four entities who presented this morning, so I'll just launch straight into that. Firstly, to Dr. Zadna, I'd like to get some clearer understanding and insights into the strategic partnerships aspects of your intended outcomes. So could you please outline for us just who those strategic partners have been, currently are, and might be in the future? And what is the value and benefits to be obtained from those partnerships? I remember there was mention, for example, of the CIPC with regards to boosting SMB cyber registrations. So I understand that's one small aspect, but if you could elaborate, please, and just shed some light on the bigger picture you're looking at, that would be useful for our understanding of how you're pursuing those partnerships. And then turning to CETA, with reference to strategic program one, that's thought leadership and service delivery, and the purpose of that program is stated as being to provide well-researched, tested, innovative, and secure solutions, products, and services aimed at digitizing government to improve citizens' experience of government services. The question is whether the idea of the creation of what's usually called a digital ID that could be used transversely by citizens in their interface across the whole spectrum of government departments and services. Is that digital ID idea on your radar as CETA to research, develop, and then catalyze within government? And where this comes from is that I had a meeting with a tech startup just over a week ago who brought this notion to my attention. And I think I might have seen one or two articles over the past month or two also referring to it. And I think it really could add great value in terms of eliminating duplication and enhancing efficiencies when citizens are having different or dealing with different public sector structures, from SARS to SAPS to SASA, where you aren't having to make multiple copies repeatedly of various documents or get affidavits when you're making submissions to different entities and departments. So if you could just elaborate on whether that's something that's on your radar, within your scope, and how that might be taken forward. And then turning to GCIS, let me just start here by commending GCIS specifically on the quality of the gov.za website, both for the comprehensiveness and the detail of information on the portal, as well as being kept generally up to date, which is a rare observation to make when it comes to government websites. I've always found it enormously useful when I'm needing to, for example, find emails for the offices of ministers, if I need to send correspondence, or especially last year during the lockdowns, finding the latest lockdown regulations that they were amended and promulgated, and just generally to finding documents like Acts of Parliament, policy papers, and other government gazettes. So I certainly give you kudos for that, and please keep it up. Now, as members, we always receive copies of most of the GCIS printed publications, like Vuvuzenzele, in our pigeonholes. And I often wonder what the total distribution footprints looks like for that, and if that content is achieving optimal reach among citizens. So could GCIS just give us a picture of how and where these publications go in order to reach people in communities on the ground? And secondly, have you done surveys or impact assessments to evaluate whether people are actually drawing value from that content that's being pushed out? And especially with reference to your strategic outcome of an informed and empowered citizenry, and then that feedback to inform how that could be improved. And finally, Chair, turning to MDDA, I'm often worried about a risk of a sort of fragmented or silo approach by different role players in the small media development space, especially when it comes to funding. So I'm just wondering if there's any thinking by the MDDA, or any current implementation even, around partnerships with other big funders who already support small media development. Like, for example, the OSF, I know they've been doing major work for many years around supporting small independent media operators, as well as other philanthropic foundations. So even if it's something as simple as just regular ongoing information sharing, just so everyone, sort of have an integrated picture of the landscape and how they can align and amplify each other's efforts, or possibly even collaboration around joint funding on certain projects, so we can really optimize and synergize the funding that's been pumped into developing those small media operators. That's all from me, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mpele. Unless I'm missing a hand, I'll now give Honorable Kubeka. Please proceed.
Thank you very much, Chair. Greetings to Deputy Minister. Greetings to all officials who are present in this meeting this morning. Greetings to Honorable Members. Honorable Chair, proudly, safely so, let me appreciate you and acknowledge all the presentations that have been made in this morning, Chair. Maybe let me start by acknowledging and also welcoming the interim board of CETA. But let me also say, in that number that they have presented, I can hear also on the side of the mixture, it seems as if also it's my concern. Even if we are saying we want to see all capable men and women to come and assist there, but let them take into consideration also, I think the message they will send a DG on the side of the minister to say, indeed, let she consider also that side. But let me welcome them, and I hope as I can listen to Mitate Luvuyo, he was also presenting to us, these members, to say who are they. Welcome to this department. I hope you'll assist, but indeed, take note that you managed to have somebody who is skillful, who is committed, like in that case. So I hope you'll also give them a support in order that he must excel more than here, because indeed we can see that we are Kuba in that side of that entity of CETA. Chair, let me start by Dot Vetna. On the side of Dot Vetna, I would appreciate, because I can hear that they are saying they are still having a clean record, even in this financial year. But let me say, on the side of their training, can we just get an understanding to say, are they consider also other spheres on the side, especially of women, youth, disabilities? Are they taking into consideration to say they can have that issue to give a support? And also on the side of the entrepreneurs, can they confident enough to tell us to say more or less at the moment how many that they have managed, maybe just to give them that training in order that they can show us to say indeed they are pushing on that side in order to assist all this entity that we are raising. And also let me raise to say, on the side of domain, indeed, as they were saying, their target is 25,000. At least up to now, can they say something to say more or less, it's 10, it's 5, or how many at least that they have managed also to achieve on that side? The other one is that, are they having a template in order to monitor or evaluate their task as they are continuing? Because now, if you can check, their services is direct on the issue of service delivery as they are trying to empower the community. So is there any template that they can say they are using in order to monitor whilst they are busy working with the communities there? And let me safely say, I hope these entities, they are aware today we are facing on the issue of jobs, but they are the ones also who can assist our economic recovery plan. Is there anything that they can say maybe on those side of economic recovery plan? Their main key focus that they can see that indeed they can convince to say it can assist. What is that they can give to us? And also let me just come to the side of CETA. As I'm saying, indeed, we appreciate the job that is doing by Ntate Luvuyo. Indeed, we are saying we can see now the way on the side of CETA, because every time we were having that key frustration, but I can see that even on the side of the strategy that you are putting in front of us, indeed those are the key challenges that are facing that side of CETA, but indeed you are trying to achieve as you have raised even on the side of the digital infrastructure. I'm supporting to say, indeed, as you are presenting, if you are you want to take care on your issue of your network, indeed, I appreciate because you are saying also you are taking care on the issue of the maintenance in order that whatever that you are putting there, you need to take care about it, you need to maintain in order that it can take you in a long life spending. So thanks for that on that side by showing that courage to say indeed our network need to be maintained. And also you have raised the issue of the investment. By focusing on that, indeed it will assist on the side of service delivery to say let our service delivery stand on its own. And also, can I say, is it possible to extend, especially on the side of the municipalities, on the issue of assisting all the municipalities that we are having on the side of the system? Is it possible, CETA, to can work with the municipalities in order to back up and make those municipalities to have a clear system that will manage to run the municipalities orderly? And also, I'm happy because I can hear on the side of the procurement, that's where a big frustration were. But now I can see that it is a priority on the side of CETA. We are saying we will give you that support to push in order that at the end of the day, CETA must see itself on the issue of receiving something which is going to be possible when coming to the side of the audit. Let me come to the side of the GCIS. Indeed, as Honorable Mbele is raising to say, Niyaqhuba, it's like that, and we are hopefully to say, even in this day, as we are facing now the issue of the third wave, probably we are hoping that you will be just like that. And I would like to appreciate and saying, I can hear even that Michael is presenting that courage and the spirit. You can see that there is indeed a teamwork on the side of GCIS. The morale is so high. I would like also to see that spirit in other entities, just to be like that. But we are saying we are fully much aware also when coming to the issue of the budget. And huge budget, as you were saying, we have tried to budget for those two programs, which will include the side of MDDA and Branding SA. But when you are listening on the side of the MDDA, it seems as if also you've managed to back up them and give them that support with that budget. But the side of MDDA also, huge amount, you can see that it's been taken by the signal transmission that they are being assisted also by the side of the Centec. We are saying maybe we still need to consider there on that side of the MDDA to say how best also can they be supported, because indeed, if you can check, they are doing a direct service delivery when coming also to our community radio station. So with what am I saying, I'm giving the issue of saying also, on the issue of their small commercial print, it is also a concern, because you can see that also MDDA needs a support there. But we need to have a strategy just to see how best also can we give the side of the MDDA on that side of the small commercial print in order that they can do more on that side. Also, I would appreciate on that side of MTTA, because you can see they've managed to align with those programs that they have been tabled in order that finally they can have positive results on those programs that they have been tabled. And they have managed also to have a mitigation on the side of those risks that they are there. They are presenting to say, indeed, whatever that they can have a challenge, they are still prepared to have a solution, in order that they must indeed have a plan to mitigate all those challenges that they are encounter. So I'm saying we are appreciating, and I'm happy to hear that you are saying on the side of the languages, you want each and every community that is having that language must receive so we still do appreciate on that side. So can you keep on doing that, because all these entities, these targets that they have put in their entities, we feel strongly that indeed they will achieve it, because it's them who are saying we are fully convinced with these targets that we are saying for this financial year we want to achieve. So in that spirit, we will keep on backing all these entities at the end of the day as a committee, just to see these positive results into all these targets that are here. They will no longer having no stories and whatsoever, because all of us now, we are used even into these challenges that we were raising to say there is this monster called COVID. So now finally we are having responses to say how best can we achieve. On the issue of the vacancies, I hope all the entities, they will work in a manner that they are closing those gaps, because at the end of the day, in order to produce positive results even there, you need to have enough staff. But we are saying also, let the staff not be there for the sake of being there. Let the staff try to give or to yield positive response to the entity. And I'm happy because indeed, as other entities like Zetna, as it's saying, is trying to work on a harder manner on the issue of reskilling the staff. Let it be so, because we don't want to hear the entity on itself will be the one who's going to raise to say it's having a redundant staff. It will be unfair, because at the end of the day, you are there to work, to see in your employees that all of them, they are supposed to perform and yield results that they will assist the entity. So I thank you, Chair. I will just pause there.
Thank you, Honorable Kubeka. I'm not sure if there's any other hand. In the absence of that, would then ask for responses in the order of presentations that were given. I will then afford a second round of questions if members would want to follow up to clarify. If that's good. So we can then start from Dotzetna until MTTA in the order. When we get to GCIS and MTTA, Deputy Minister, you'll just give an indication as to whether you would want to come in first, or you would allow them to present and close the gaps after that. So we'll be guided by you at that point. But for now, I'll recognize Tatsetna for responses.
Thank you, Chairperson. This is Mulihe Wesi from Tatsetna. Taking the first question from Honorable McKenzie, the one relating to the registrar registry framework, which is the target we missed in the past financial year.
The reason behind us not meeting the target is simply because of our changing operations in the first and the second quarter due to the pandemic as an organization, as we're preparing ourselves to respond, thus ensuring that we remain functional. But unfortunately, this particular project was one of those that was hard hit, which led to the project only starting in the third quarter. But of course, I have full confidence now in Chairperson and Honorable McKenzie that we will succeed. One has seen many successes up to date in terms of the milestones that we have set for ourselves to have met as part of the project. Indeed, we are using external resources to assist us in achieving this particular project. But the key one is a legal service provider, which is Murata, an SMME based here in Gauteng area. Murata Inc., my apologies, I need to correct that. And then, of course, flowing from the same question was, what is this framework all about? Indeed, it is part of our core mandate, Chairperson. And, of course, we are trying to ensure that we have a framework in place as per the prescripts of the ECT Act, Section 65, which requires us to license and, of course, regulate registries and registrars. So in the absence of us having these regulations, concessions and agreements have been reached, we are working quite closely with an entity which is called the South African Central Registry, of which thus far we have had a very brilliant relationship, who are assisting us as a regulator to provide those services. Moving on, Chair, to the other questions from Honorable McKenzie relating to awareness. Indeed, we are cognizant of the fact that there is a possible imminent third wave. And in preparation for this as an entity, we are now adopting an online or digital marketing and engagement strategy, which we are busy finalizing. However, in the past financial year, what we have done a mixture of both online, digital, and also in-person awareness campaigns, whereby we saw a lot of success in terms of our reach on the success one or on the digital one, where we leverage social media platforms and also printed media and so forth. Honorable McKenzie, we do welcome the compliment, and we will make sure that this target of public schools, the provision of public schools with domain names will be met, especially the pilot of 200 schools. Hopefully by the fourth quarter, when I report back to the committee, I would report back either having exceeded that particular target and also highlighting the successes of this particular project. In terms of training material, currently we are producing our own training material, and we are at preliminary engagements with NEMISA to see how we best collaborate, seeing that they are our brother or sister entity within DCDT who deal with digital skilling. And what we do in essence is or speaks to digital skilling, even though it does touch on SME development. But we are seeing how possible is it to leverage their learning management systems, which are already in place, which are quite successful, if I may add at that. Relating to the point or the cost of professional services, I think it's important, Chair, that one touches on the fact that as Zetna, in the past and currently, we still rely on professional services to offer some of our core support services. And in this current financial year, what we have budgeted under that 1.8 million is for external audit, which is a specific amount of 166,400 rands. Internal audit function, which is 260,000. And then, of course, we have company secretariat support, which is budgeted at 313,500 rands. Then we have accounting services. This is an outsourced entity, which is giving us a financial management and, of course, our transactional accounting support. And we have budgeted this at 561,600 rands. And then we do have HR consulting services. And this is in the absence of having our own internal HR support, we have budgeted an amount of 374,400 rand, and then we have an amount of 166,400 rand for any external reports that we need to produce, this relating to our annual report, which we have to send out for copywriting, copy editing, and so forth. Moving on to the questions relating to, from, rather, my apologies, Honorable Mbele, relating to strategic partnerships. There's a clear intent on our side for this current financial year, Chairperson, that we will align most of our partnerships, as we have done in the past, with our strategic outputs or intended outcomes. So touching on the past ones, as I've mentioned, one, which is CIPC, which is the most known one, simply because we have, through this partnership, offered a platform for any businesses in South Africa and both internationally, as they register on CIPC platforms, they can also register domain names, thus making CIPC a registrar. The other one we have had, and which we are currently reviewing, is a strategic partnership with the Film and Publications Board. And this simply is because one of the mandates that FPB deals with, which is Child Safety Online, also relates on what we have to offer as an authority, which speaks to our internet governance mandate of providing safety to children and, of course, the public in general through awareness and so forth. The other one we had engagement prior in the past was with NEMISA, looking at how best can we partner from a digital skilling perspective. And then, of course, it gives me great pleasure, as I've indicated before, we are also revisiting this particular engagement with NEMISA to see how do we widen the scope, because if one looks at our entities in terms of size, we are relatively the same, and we can piggyback on each other on achieving some, if not most, of our money deliverables. The other ones that we have recently concluded is with MIC CETA. This partnership we concluded in Q4 of the previous financial year. The intent of this partnership is so that we become a conduit for MIC CETA to deliver on most of its program related to the DNS space while we are still speaking to the 4IR, the digital economy, and so forth. And then, of course, on our part is with an expectation that MIC CETA will assist us in delivering one of our programs, if not many of our programs. And the one that I'm specifically speaking to is the DNS practitioner program, as I've mentioned as I was doing my presentation. The sole intent of this one is to capacitate, as indicated, 150 or so individuals, SMMEs in particular, and entrepreneurs, of course, with skill sets required within the DNS space to ensure that they are impactful participants within the space and also they add value. And I think the fallback plan is that since this will be an accredited program, should the individuals or participants in this particular program not be able to set up entities that will be able to provide employment to other South Africans, they can fall back on this particular qualifications and seek employment within the industry. Thus, of course, eliminating to a certain extent the issue that we have in terms of employment. The other one that we have recently concluded is the Proudly SA one. And this one only made sense to ourselves simply because we are South African and, of course, we need to be proud and show some patriotism. And there's no other way to show that by aligning with an entity that speaks to that, to say we are proudly SA. And then, of course, we hope that through this endeavor, they will avail their network and also will avail our partners through our venue chain so that they are onboarded onto their platforms and they partake within their events and they show the country and they show the international, of course, audiences to say, what is it that we have to offer from a DNS perspective? Moving on, Jim, to the questions from Honorable Kubeka. The issue of training. Indeed, there is consideration when it comes to women, youth, and people living with disabilities. And then, notably, Chair, for the previous financial year, we conducted 309 training sessions. And of these 309, 216 were contact sessions. And then, of course, my apologies, I need to correct myself. 309 participants attended the events. And all of these 216 of the participants were through contact sessions. 93 of them were through virtual platforms. And in totality, 34% of these 309 participants were women. And then, of course, we will strive going forward that we provide community and, of course, DCET, the statistics now speaking to youth in particular and people living with disabilities. Another notable thing is that, Chairperson, the provinces that were impacted directly or where we conducted these trainings were Limpopo, Eastern Cape, and then, of course, Northwest. And we will continue to target these particular provinces, as mentioned by my chair of the board, that our focus is on these distant and rural areas and semi-urban areas. Furthermore, Chair, relating to the target of registered domain names, in the past financial year, we registered 77,262 domain names. And then, of course, this could be seen as an anomaly, but at the same time, Chair, can be seen as an opportunity. Why am I saying an anomaly? Because most people during the height of the lockdown, they migrated onto online platforms, thus registering a lot of domain names. And this showed us there's an opportunity in terms of growth, whereby we have exceeded our 25,000 intended target of domain names. And then, of course, this brings us, by the close of Q4, the total number of registered domain names, these being commercial domain names, to 1,335,245. So that's quite a high number, and we will continue, as mentioned, try to improve on that while we ensure that those that are onboarded into our domain name space, they remain, and then we create a vibrant domain name space. In terms of templates for monitoring, we use our own data that we extract from either the outreaches, the engagements, and the awarenesses we do. And we are also intentional in terms of the mediums that we use. For example, we have taken a position that we would, going forward, use a mixture of either commercial radio stations and also community radio stations, thus speaking directly to the communities that we will be engaging going forward. Furthermore, the numbers in terms of the ratio of those radio stations tells us how many people we could have reached in terms of our intention to raise awareness of the domain name. I think moving on, Chair, which is the last point relating to the key focuses on the creation of employment. Indeed, for this particular financial year, as mentioned earlier on, Chair, we would like to initiate this DNS practitioner program, which of course will see quite a number of individuals. And if all goes well, I think a successful on my part and of course of the entity would be if all these 150 entrepreneurs and prospective SME owners become employers themselves. That's simply meaning that they create more employment, more opportunities, and furthermore extending, because the target will be women, youth, and people with living with disabilities in these rural, semi-urban, and at times in townships. They will be the target, so meaning that we will be a step closer in terms of our ambitions to digitize the informal and also township economies, because the only way to do it is by providing people digital presences and showing the value of partaking in the .za domain space. On that note, Chair, I think that is the end of my submission and response to the question. If I missed anything, Chair, you can ask, the members can ask any follow-ups. Thank you.
Thank you, CEO. Now I'll move to Sita.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and members of the Portfolio Committee and board members. If I start with your questions, Honorable Kubeka, yes, thank you. I did commit to the portfolio committee that I will stay within CISA until my contract ends in January, and I will also support the board to ensure that there is a smooth transition for the organization. As honorable members know, CISA has been changing leadership quite more frequently, and I really need to ensure that we do fully implement the strategy that we presented to yourselves. And I will work also with this interim board to ensure there is indeed a smooth transition also for the remaining time that I have. For the work, Honorable Kubeka, with the municipalities, I can reconfirm as part of the integration of 8 public-facing services, we are also including municipalities. So one of the practical things that Home Affairs and municipalities need is that there must be an integration between Home Affairs and municipalities, so that if I go to Home Affairs, municipalities should already update my proof of residence. So I don't need to go on all the time resubmitting my proof of residence and my identity information. So there must be that easy integration among those systems, and we are indeed going to look at that. We are starting also with your 8 district development models as announced by the presidency to ensure that we integrate the systems of municipalities with national and provincial government. So technically, CISA will be developing the technical interface integration base, and we are now working also with COCTA. We do have great relations as CISA with SALGA, so we'll also be working with them to say, how can we assist you? So in this instance, we are not coming selling things. We are coming to say we have capability. So can we work with you in terms of the capability that we have, integrating you with the key department you wish to be integrated with? For municipalities, for argument's sake, I know they need to be integrated with Home Affairs and the rest. So we will be pushing that. So it's them that will be giving us requirements of how they wish to see this integration. On procurement, yes. We will continue to automate. I'm happy that we have now automated procurement and we are meeting your SMME-related targets. But the key issue for us is the transparency now of our procurement process. We should be able at the end of a tender process to say companies A, B, C, D, E, F, you lost this bid and these are the reasons. We should be professional. We should be able to automate our processes to that effect, where we are able to publish the results that company Lufuyo won because of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So we're working on getting there, but more importantly, everyone who touches the procurement process must undergo some ethical, must have ethical conduct, and we must implement all the measures to ensure that decision making is above board, because that will address the irregularity that CISA has been known for years. So for management side, from myself down to the lowest level staff that deal with money, we are continuing assessing lifestyle not once in 5 years, but on an annual basis, so that we can see what people do and how we need to manage it. But this also is linked with Honorable Mbele's question around your digital ID and integration of government systems. So Honorable Mbele, yes, I can inform you that part of the work that we want to do is a digital ID. A simple digital ID means all of the systems in government where Lufuyo touches must be integrated, so that there is one integrated record of Lufuyo at the end of the day. So for the criminal justice system, so if you use IJS for argument's sake, your integrated justice cluster, we are working with them on how we can create an integrated criminal justice solution where you are known. So if I am one of those people that there are issues around me, that information should share easily across all of the entities that are within a criminal justice system without the delay of investigators trying to get information from one end to the other. But also, as you integrate systems of government, we make them more powerful in terms of preventative measures they need to do on one side to protect government, on the second side to ensure that there are efficiencies. So if you take integrated justice system, which we are working with them on, I can confirm that the police are already starting implementing some of the components of your digital policy. I think at some point we will share with that with you in full detail, but let me allow first to present to the Police Portfolio Committee, and I think once we come from there, we will share that detail so that you can also see it's not talk. We are already implementing some of the initiatives around a digital ID. The key issue behind it, integrated government. So CETA is now saying we are developing platforms to integrate government so that you stop these duplications, having to be asked by government departments to submit the same information again. Take for argument, take your test, your temporary employment with Department of Labor. Had they accepted CETA's proposals to integrate all the government databases, it would have been easier for them to ensure that they don't pay people that are on SARS database or on this other database, and CETA would have done that work easily. And what I'm saying is easily because we are already the supporters of their databases that are sitting with us. But we need permission from them to allow us to integrate them, which we are doing. On NSFAS, we are also talking to them to say, how can we integrate the NSFAS database with your labor database, your SARS database, and other databases, so that if my son applies for a bursary, the system should already say, we already have information that comes from CETA, that Nuvuyo earns more and can afford to pay for his son's education. And that's what we are putting in front of NFS. So say, right here, how can we help you to integrate your database with all the different databases that sit with government so that as applications come in from universities, it's easier for you to make decisions so that we don't then have people unnecessarily benefiting from what government is putting up, but on the other side, providing efficiencies. Are we going to see, Honorable McKenzie, any e-home affairs application? So one of those things we were talking on, as you'll understand, about 3 weeks ago, when ENCA was visiting all the Home Affairs offices and we were there. So one of the main issues for Home Affairs is that there is a huge traffic coming in to apply. The same traffic comes again to collect their IDs. So how can you automate your delivery purposes so that you don't still have huge traffics of people coming to your offices just to collect their IDs or their passports? So can we digitize that process and have your electronic mailboxes that can be made available at critical places where you just put in your finger and you are able to be able to get that? So we're looking at some of those initiatives that we can do with Home Affairs. But as you all understand, with Home Affairs specifically, so CETA is not at this point doing any work where directly we are supporting any of their systems. But we are engaging with them to say, but we are here. All of the work that you do as Home Affairs is outsourced to too many companies. How can CETA come in where we can also make available to you some of the solutions that we have as CETA? So at least I can say there is an improvement in the relationship that now with DG that has just started now and DDG Mabuso, there are now more discussions about what is it that we can do to digitize some portions of Home Affairs. But one of the critical issues, if you use Home Affairs as an example, is that they have a legacy infrastructure that they have not upgraded. And if you take their offices will have one data line that comes in. So if somebody is digging on front of the street where that data line is, the whole Home Affairs building goes down. So we are also talking to them beyond just digitizing their services to say you are running a critical service for government. You can't just be sitting with one data line. And worst of all, Honorable McKenzie, you find a lot of Home Affairs offices are running a digital line and 2 megabits per second, 5 megabits per second. A Home Affairs office should be running at a far much more better infrastructure of 100 gigs and above in terms of the speed. But there are engagements with them around that. But like all other departments, there are positive engagements in terms of the types of solutions that we can give them. And then you have the contested terrain when it then comes to procurement, where then CETA will say, no, we don't agree with you on what you need to do. So we are managing some of those things, but I can say the relationship is at least improving. We are talking of possible solutions on what is it that we can do for them. I can say it is not where our relationship is with the police. As you would know that with the police, we are already developing solutions. So you will take, for argument's sake, your track and trace solution for people in the criminal justice, where we've developed a solution that has saved them almost half a billion rand and the record time. So with police, we're far advanced, but we're putting all our efforts also to ensure that critical departments like Home Affairs, we also start getting beyond just being a procurement agency. But we can help, even if we help them, to manage the contracts that they have so that they can deliver the right services that are required for government. So it's a work in progress, Honorable McKenzie, in terms of that. Honorable Bumbu, on collecting the monies, one of the key problems that CETA had before was that CETA was signing one-year SLAs with departments. So meaning the SLA ends at 31st March every year. But you are forced to continue providing services on 1st April. So you will then find CETA for the next 6 months, they are providing services, but a contract has not yet been signed. And therefore, payments are not being effected. So you end the year not having been fully paid for all the services. Whilst they will acknowledge the debt, but they haven't yet started paying you. So we're now doing a couple of things. One, ensuring that we sign multi-year SLAs so that there are no challenges for the finance official in each department to pay us, because at least there will be a valid three-year contract that they need to pay us for. Secondly, what we are now doing is to ensure that this monthly governance meeting that needs to happen to ensure departments hold us accountable in terms of the SLA, they get the report of what is it that we have done, they get the invoice for the work that we have done, they sign those things off, and now we force them, now they need to start paying us within 30 days. So we are now there. So with a lot of departments, we have now started signing your multi-year, your three-year type SLAs, which then push our recoverability to at least better than the usual 60% we used to have. At least now we are beyond 80%. And we're saying it can't drop below 80%. Can it be 100%, Honorable Egumbu? The challenge for that is that when departments receive budget in April, they tend to take your April and May loading budget on their systems, and it delays being paid by government departments within those 2 months of April and May. So hence we're putting that buffer, but we're working with them to say, how can we help them to simplify the work that they do so that they can pay us? But on the good side of things, we are not writing off any debt at CETA. So we are harsh, we are collecting all the money. We're not a budgeted entity, we don't get money. The money we get is on the basis of the services that we render. So now our collection mechanisms, we have beefed them up, they are harsher. As you will know before, CETA would be paying service providers on behalf of departments, and we wait for months on end before we recover our monies. That process we stopped already last year. Where we are clear, if we have to pay a service provider on your behalf, we will not do that unless you pay us. Hence, we have now started seeing that departments are now starting to pay us on time. I think, Honorable Chair, these are the questions that I have noted. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Sutita. As I indicated, Deputy Minister, you'd indicate if you'd want to come first or you'd want to close the desk at the end.
Thank you, Chair. Can I request that they answer, GCIS please answer, and MDDA please answer? I don't think there's anything which they might not be able to respond to.
GCIS?
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Mr. Maneri, and Honourable Deputy Minister. We'll do justice, I hope. But firstly, Chairperson, may I really thank every one of the members, Honourable, for their complimentary remarks. It is part of what Honourable Kubeka was speaking about, the morale. I think our interactions with the Portfolio Committee, we make sure, Honourable Members, that we give that feedback to our staff. Honourable Mbele, I will really ask Tyrone to ensure that the team at the web and digital side get those remarks. Please, Tyrone, make sure that they really are, as Honourable Kubeka said, part of what makes our team spirits great. and we all really do feel, and Honourable Mac, I hope my KZN Midlands in particular English hasn't given a wrong assessment of the word just. I'll have to do some research, but we are very pleased where we are under the leadership of these two great principals and the team under Pumla. So that is evident in some of the results. Tarona is going to try just now, honourable members, to respond to the book questions. Honourable Mbele, I'm very appreciative and pleased. Anytime Liesl Serf and her team at the IRC in Cape Town who put the materials in the inboxes are always available for any additional support you need. So I will convey to Liesl that word of appreciation as well. They are also a very key member of our team. Honourable members, obviously I really am alive to the members who raised the question about the third wave and our concerns in the country. I would like to give the assurance to honourable members as follows. My colleague Tyrone may top up from his side of the equation. We have a comprehensive communication framework in place for the management of this phase of the communication work. Honourable members will remember last year we presented to you the work that we were doing. For the 21-22 year, we have a very, very comprehensive strategy. It has been approved by the Interministerial Committee, the reason chaired by the DP and also by the National Coronavirus Command Council. The reason I use the word comprehensive, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, particularly Honourable Kumbu and others who asked this, is that it covers an extensive framework that is then cascaded and integrated with provincial government structures and with district communication hubs, which are very strongly aligned to the district development forums, NAC joints, war rooms. Some of them are still in the transition of the name for their structure. So that framework, Honourable Chair and members, was developed. It covers a full range of issues such as television, radio, does a lot of social media work. I hope honourable members have seen the kickoff last week was with a squeeze back and a clock, a countdown clock, showing the registrations where they are at this point in time. The campaign is rolling out in full from this week through the various other media. The other important element, honourable chair, is that it has a direct communication series of mobile vehicles which are going to be moving all over the country to do that activation, often accompanied, as I said, by loud hailing, which continues extensively in communities, and also with extensive work, as my colleague here, Lumkom Chimda, would be delighted to know, we all know his area of passion, intensive work with the community radio sector, and I must say very proudly that we have a lovely collaboration with Suzuki in the areas of the MDDA's work. So it's a very wall-to-wall strategy. We were very pleased, honourable members, that on top of the baseline that Tobisa presented, we did make a pitch to National Treasury, and we were assigned an additional amount, not a huge amount, I must say, but the fiscal condition considered, an amount of 50 million rand, which for the 21-22 year we've already earmarked into the phases to ensure that, firstly, we really put our weight behind the vaccination drive, but secondly, that we make sure that the what do we call them, the non-pharmaceutical interventions, NPIs, are sustained. Perhaps a very important highlight that I'd like to draw to the attention of the committee is our profound partnership with the business and faith and organized labor sector through the formation called Business for South Africa. We have a weekly meeting with the B4SA, the communication work stream of that national partnership, Honorable Chair. We have joint events together. We ensure that the toolkit that we've developed is widely cascaded throughout the sector. One of these meetings are currently unfolding, so many sectors are engaging with our toolkit, which we have given a free of charge to everybody to make use of. The spirit and attitude of co-branding is there to allow any partner to use it. And I can say with great confidence that on Saturday, we held the forum with all the faith leaders, and I mean, I was so thrilled that the Hindu Masaba movement of South Africa even volunteered to translate it into vernacular languages that are used by the Hindu faith leaders, which was a great contribution. And all the Christian churches as well and the Muslim structure have even offered their mega sites for any public information, that they are very glad to be our partner. So as much as we are concerned and we keep our eye on the science, Honourable Chair, We have a very close synergy with the regional, they call it the RECCE structure in the health department. We keep a very close synergy with the other work streams, particularly that one, and keep science. Mr. Ntembo used to always say to us, science is the guide. And we keep a very, very close eye on the science in order to make sure we ramp up our messages. One of the things that we've been doing, which I'm very pleased since our last performance and our last appearance, and why Honourable Kubeka and other members, I say we appreciate the motivation and the wisdom of the committee. We now, on a daily basis, translate all the key messages. You know, you've seen from the morning session, we develop messages of the day. And obviously, they're very biased towards COVID, towards prevention measures. They are now translated on a daily basis into all languages and distributed to every corner of the country. We're busy cementing through SASA and SAPO and the DSD department, a partnership with the post office, with the social security agency, and the community development network, partnership of content purveyors. So they will go from door to door, community to community, the use of pay points to make sure that the message goes out. So we really are ramping up any effort, to every effort to make sure that we're not going to be succumbing to any third wave. From the GCIS side, Honourable Members, I can just say that we do have in place all the requisite capability, PPEs, and for example, the full functioning virtual and other online systems. We monitor the work of our staff who are remotely, so we ensure optimum performance. So should we get a situation where we need to move to another level, we as GCIS are more than organisation already, fit for purpose and adapted from the lessons of last year. And then finally, before I ask Tyrone if his microphone is working to make a few additions, we have been able to cement a very strong partnership with the media. Our public broadcaster sister is very, very supportive and very, very much a partner with us to make sure that any event, so as not to overextend the size of the event, is live broadcast to other broadcasters if it requires a smaller audience. And we do have those solid partnerships with the media in place, even through the establishment of multiple WhatsApp groups with the media. So I do believe that our relationship with the media is such that it enables a very strong attack on any degree of COVID fatigue that may be sitting in amongst the public. Now, Honourable Members, Tyrone did encounter a problem with the microphone, so I don't know if he wants to try and make a contribution, but he did type Honourable Mbele a very detailed response in the chat group because we do intensively manage the hook. Honourable Mbele, in previous committees, we've been able to share pictures of where the community actually stampede the vehicle in a rural area to get their copy of the book. It is a highly, highly sought after copy, and we do intensive research on it. Tyrone, I don't know if your microphone is back up and running, shall we just give you a shot? Mr. Thiel? Okay.
Thank you. Thank you, Michael. You can hear me on this occasion.
We hear you, sir.
Thank you, Michael, and good morning, Honourable Chairperson, Deputy Minister, my colleagues, Honourable Members, my colleagues at GCIS and across the agencies who are at the committee this morning. I apologise again for the fact that I wasn't able to join earlier. All my buttons were working, but for some reason the network didn't let me through. I think just very briefly, Chair, on the issue of VUC, as Michael has mentioned, I have posted a written reply, but I think just to summarise, it will be to say that we currently publish 850,000 paper copies of the paper every 2 weeks, so that makes it 1.7 million a month. We also publish online at vukuzenzele.gov.za, and we, and of course, with the prospect of broadband and with greater affordability in terms of data costs, we hope that our migration to digital platforms will be
will be quick, and that we will, through that, ensure just about universal coverage to any South African who wishes to access the publication. The publication, obviously, the content frame for that are the four priorities at the higher level that that the President impressed on us at the beginning of this political year, and that was our defeat of the COVID pandemic, economic recovery, economic reforms that will lead to sustainable jobs and investment, and then, of course, the fight against corruption and build corruption in all sectors of society, and the effort to build the capability of the state. But within that framework, Vukuzenzele really takes a monthly or a two-weekly deep dive into economic opportunities. And information around economic opportunities are particularly required by people in the market we serve. These are either rural communities or people in peri-urban areas. We say peri-urban because a lot of rural residents are migrating to cities in search of these economic opportunities. And so the paper is really built around examples of people who have accessed government-created or supported programs, and people who have also accessed opportunities that are offered by the private sector and other social partners in partnership with government, and in the past year as part of the effort to secure economic reconstruction and recovery. And each story is accompanied by an information box of how-to information, where we give people contact details for the agencies and departments concerned so that people are able to access this information. We do conduct short-term checks on the paper's performance. One of that is audits on delivery days to make sure that the paper gets into people's hands. Michael's already spoken about the popularity and the demand for the paper. But part of the reason we conduct those checks is to make sure that the paper doesn't get dumped and that people are deprived of the information in the process. And then in terms of a longer-term assessment of performance and of the needs of the information needs of audiences, we conduct regular research to ensure that we are on message, that people find the paper relevant and relatable, and to make sure, yet again, that people do receive the paper when we expect them to receive it. This is obviously one of those platforms where we are producing and disseminating information, and that is why the research is important, to see the way in which people interact with this product. But of course, this effort has to be read along with the point Michael made much earlier this morning, that GCIS engages in a broad range of communication activities that include two-way communications in the way that Michael outlined about our engagement with different interest groups and stakeholder communities. So I think I'll leave it there for now, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Seal. Mr. Nena, would you just make the quick top-up? Thank you, Tara. Appreciate it. Briefly, Sandile.
Yes, thank you, Michael, and good morning to Jefferson. I just wanted to add that in terms of our relationship with the service providers, that is the mobile service providers, the online version of the Vuzenzele newspaper is actually zero rated. So meaning that you do not have to have data on your phone to actually access the government newspapers. It's actually zero rated. So I thought I should add that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair and colleagues. And then just as we close, just to indicate, Honourable Chair, that on our GSAS website, www.gsas.gov.za, you will see the little icon where the toolkit for this phase of the campaign is. And please, Honourable Members, you are most welcome to draw down any of the content there that you find useful. Alternatively, the GSAS provincial offices are all available, and in Parliament, legal is available as well. So, Honourable Chair, I think we've responded to all the questions placed to us by honourable members. And thank you, sir.
Thank you, GCIS. Can I then recognise MDD for those who want to comment?
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson. I'm not going to be as so brave as Tyrone after this morning's mishaps. I'm going to try and tackle the observation and the question asked by Honourable Mbele about a perceived fragmented approach on funding or partnerships with other funders and other partners, as it were. I think it is a good observation. In fact, it is that observation that we made ourselves, I think, a year ago, and that we realized that we're going, we were just chasing our tails. We were running around, we're going everywhere with little impact per se, because we were not coordinated. Honourable members must remember that I came in at the MDD 8 years ago, first as a secondee, so I was determined to do as much as I could during the time that was given to you. That was before my appointment. So what we've done, we've taken a step back, honourable members, and gone back to what does the Act provide for us in terms of the in terms of sources of funding, whereas we receive money from the state in terms of grants and the USAF levies from the commercial broadcasters, there is other provisions in the Act that we could also get money that is legally accrued. We can also look for foreign donations or foreign donors. And so we've now gotten approved a fundraising strategy by the board last month, and we will therefore be coordinating our efforts in terms of fundraising. And I think key to the fundraising for us is ensuring that once we've got this sustainability model, which has got three pillars, we look at those pillars and we say what resources, what part kind of partners are required for each of the pillars that I named earlier. So that's what we're going to be doing. In terms of training funders, we've got OSF in our books. In fact, we work with them very closely, especially around elections training. We did that in 2019. We're going to be knocking on their doors. Again, now we've got a draft MOA with NEMISA. We've got a two-year-old, I think it's the third year now, with CEDA. We signed in August with MICT CETA. As I said earlier, we also submitted a very comprehensive training program where we are beginning to say, perhaps as part of mitigating the high signal costs, when we fund a startup, entity broadcaster, maybe we should be considering giving them their own transmitters, and therefore we're going to need to ensure that there's enough capacity, technical capacity in the communities once we get into that space. But I think it is something that the board must still deliberate on and decide how to move forward. But we've been to the telecommunications organizations, Facebook, South Africa, SEDA, and it's so many organizations we've been to, including going back to the commercial print, which had agreed to be in partnership with government and the commercial broadcasters in formulating or founding the MDDA back in 2002, the major print houses funding stopped in 2014-15 for various reasons. And so we are, Honourable Bele, looking at what more can government do beyond just the grant that we get from the MDDA. For an example, what can small business do? But we're also beginning to say one of the provisions of the Act is that small commercial media, which is in the print, is primarily supposed to be funded from low interest loans. And we're beginning to say, in terms of this fundraising strategy, can we go to the post office? Can we go to post bank, perhaps? But what institutions would actually give us those low interest cost loans? So we're going to ask the parliament to just bear with us this year, just so that we're able to actually get our ducks in the row. And we think that in the second semester, then we'll start lobbying or going on a fundraising drive. I think I will, and then Honourable Kubeka, thank you very much for the comments made around the signal distribution. I think it is a us because center comes to us, the sector comes to us, and we do not have that line item. Even though we try when we've got money to put some little money so that we don't get switched off by center, but it is not nearly enough, as I've said. Small commercial print, indeed, I think needs a different strategy. The budget for the print and digital, including small commercial and community print, for the next MTEF, we're projecting only 2 million per annum for the center. If I make an example, in the last round of calls, we received about 161 applications. We were only able to fund 9 applications, and that is the norm with print. Broadcast as well, we received very high numbers, but at least we're able to get to 20-25 with broadcast because of the funding that we still receive through the use of liaisons. So if Parliament can assist us, Deputy Minister and your office can assist us, we need, I think, a bigger discussion around mitigating high signal costs. Thank you very much, Honourable Members.
Deputy Minister, I'm checking if you would want to make comments or you are satisfied thus far before I get to the second set of members. If I'm audible, because I'm trying to check if the Deputy Minister would want to come in or she's satisfied that we can move to the next round of questions if members would have further clarities or move towards wrapping up the discussion. Am I audible, members?
We can hear you, Chair. You are audible.
Okay. So I think that maybe the Deputy Minister would be struggling to get back. But I think there are responses, including those responses placed on the chat platform. And I've seen that members are indicating satisfaction to the comprehensive responses that they are getting. I will just check then if there are still members who would want to make follow-ups, having received the responses from the entities and the department. May I just check on that? Hajira, you'll also assist me because on this side I do not see any hand.
Nothing on my side, Chairperson. I'm fully covered. Just to express gratitude for the comprehensiveness and quality of the responses given. It's really been very enlightening. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Mbele.
Thank you, Chair. I think they have covered all the questions that we ask. Indeed, we are appreciative from the. Starting from the department and also to the entities, indeed, the way they are so preparing themselves and committed to this task. Thank you.
All right. Now, thanks, Honorable Members. The intention is not to prolong the discussion. And I want to indicate that it would not be because we do not want to engage further. But it's been the trend that in all those entities where the committee is satisfied with the progress made, that we do not spend a lot of time on that. But maybe just to get back to some of the questions, if I may just lift up one from Zedna, I think on a question asked by Honourable.
Sorry, Chair.
Yes, that means.
It's DMC Wire. Yes, I'm really sorry because I'm in between two meetings, this one and Cabinet. Maybe if you can assist me in relation to, is there a question which wants a political answer?
you might have found that you maybe have asked the question to GCIS or MDDA, which might not have been able to be answered administratively. It's more political and so on. If you can help me with that, and I'm really sorry, I'm between the two meetings. If you can advise me on that so that I can be able to answer that. I would not want to come to the portfolio committee and we are not responding to any question and so on. Thanks.
No, we appreciate the commitment, Deputy Minister. But as I said and confirmed by honourable members, they were satisfied with the comprehensive feedback as a way of response from the entities, including CIS and MDDA. We're just moving on the second opportunity just to clarify certain matters. And I'm sure if you want to come in politically, you'd be able to do that thereafter. And then we'd move towards closure. So you may have not lost much, but as I say, we still appreciate the commitment, given the tight schedules and the work that needs to be done.
Okay, so it's fine. Thank you. I'm here.
Saying on those again on the training aspect, I think we do appreciate the response that talks to collaboration, even with NEMISA and so on. I think maybe you need to close that point from a point of clarifying whether process or whether this is confirmed. That at least the training that we should continue to give must be accredited, so that people that go through a training, the skills should help them to live beyond that training, whether as entrepreneurs or finding a possible employment. So I just thought that you should concretize that point so that there's clarity. Sita, if you can, I think, once again clarify this point, and one appreciates that there's a new board, like Honorable Kubega would have said, and it comes at an important time where transition could be better managed, as opposed to coming at a time when the administrator, the executive administrator is gone, and that they have to start from scratch in looking at the strategy and all that. That we appreciate. But I think you've put up an important point about automation in the supply chain side, what you call the reshaping, which is much appreciated, that it is done without compromising the transformation agenda. Because you see, in the way you've explained that from submission to the adjudication, it's been like that in terms of automation. And probably at this point, you are looking at making it public in terms of who got what and how they got it. But the point I think one needs to make here is at what point or how long will that be in your estimation in terms of getting to a level where this would be done in public and that people can view it in different platforms as you go through the process. And I think for me that will then send a message that it was not just a mere public stance taken by government, that it will use technology also as part of ensuring, yes, transparency and accountability, but also assuring South Africans that the transformation agenda can still be pursued without any perceptions of corruption or anything untoward. So if you can speak to that, I think in particular I'm talking to public tendering that has got that adjudication process right from the beginning to the end, with the public being able to follow such. But also whether, because you have tested it with yourselves as Sita, as to at what point can we see this being implemented in the state as a whole going forward, or piloting particular departments or entities in that regard. So that will will be the point to lift up. It's important as we are preparing for the budget votes, discussions that would ensue after this. just come to that point. On the GCIS side, it's usually very difficult to engage GCIS with all the track record that you have. But I just thought that it may be important just for purposes of a proper oversight that we need to play as the committee. Because see, when you say we had nine strategic areas that you were looking at, now your objectives are now reduced to five. It can give an impression that it's reduced in the sense when in fact it may just be consultation. And I want you to clarify that, because it's important when we do the oversight that what you seek to achieve can still be achieved within the consolidated approach that you are taking, which is reduced 9 to 5. So if you can clarify that, I think it's important so that we know it's really not about saying would not perform, but it is just about consultation. That's the first one. Second one is that that's also for purposes of the oversight we need to play as the committee, that we don't just probably get a line that talks to you putting up a communication charter. As I said, it's important to also just unpack that so that we know that from an oversight point of view, we must be focusing more on what that charter seek to achieve and whether you are achieving that, as opposed to seeing it as the ultimate end, that once you have a communication charter developed, that's it, the target would have been met, when in fact we should be looking at what it seeks to address, and therefore be able to evaluate that. Maybe the last one would be on MDDA, and I think Honorable Mbele would have spoken to this question, but differently. I want to just lift it up again in terms of the discussions that are happening as it relates to the broadcasting side. I know in this instance the department looks at it from being an SAPC PQILTD Act, and the view has always been that tribute, it may be an opportunity to look at broadcasting. Now, looking at the funding problems in MDDA, and that others may stay more at a community level that seeks funding from time to time from MDDA, especially with advertisement funding by private sector, not that much at this point in time, with marketing budgets having been reduced as a result of COVID and so on, which even the national broadcaster would have experienced in terms of revenue losses. As to whether MDDA is considering making inputs in that regard, as we deal with this broadcasting side of things, where at least those that are able to move to the next level, from a regulator point of view, that they do not restart the process from scratch, but you can build in a process of upgrading in a way that they can also go commercial as a way of attracting investment, of course, without compromising the real reason why you needed to diversify and create space for communities to have platforms to express themselves. So those are the few points I wanted to raise, just to concretize the input made already. So we'll take it in the same way that you've presented and respond to those before we can move to closure. Starting with Dr. Zedna, CETA, GCIS, and the MTDA. Thank you.
Once more, thank you very much, Chairperson, and the honorable members. I think I need to acknowledge that
we are grateful for the opportunity in terms of clarifying, because we could have not done justice to one of the greatest endeavors we have to embark on in this particular financial year. Chair, the program that we intend on doing, which now relates to the DNS practitioner one, where we are focusing on 150 entrepreneurs, SMEs, and young people, women, and of course people living with disabilities. We intend on doing a formalized, accredited program. We will go through the process of getting the accreditation or partnering with an entity that can facilitate that accreditation for us. And the program is in two prongs. The first stage, or two levels. The first level would be an NQF level 4, and then which is an introductory to DNS. And then, of course, the last stage would be an NQF level 5, which will be the advanced, leading that to a position of someone becoming a practitioner within the space. And most importantly, what we saw it fitting is that we need to include softer skills. By this, we mean we need to capacitate the prospective participants in this particular program with skills on how to run businesses, which means finances. Furthermore, we need to capacitate them with skills on how to now manage their own businesses, and also entrepreneurial skills, soft skills that one can acquire through any training interventions, complemented by the technical training that they have to undergo to understand technically what's required. And then, of course, this will then lead them to acquiring these particular qualifications. Most importantly, as part of the program, because we can't leave these participants on a ledge, say go fend for yourself, we also hope that we will conclude very critical partnerships with various entities to incubate these prospective participants, thus ensuring that they impart the knowledge that they need, and also as part of the accreditation process that they have some form of experiential training. Furthermore, in this particular process, we are of the belief that as they acquire the skill sets, they will also see the opportunities and be self-driven to also go out there and start practicing, and also facilitating any business transactions they might find for themselves, opportunities. I think on that note, Chair, thank you very much for the opportunity to clarify. I will end my submission. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair, for the special questions, Chair. So what we wish to do, Chair, is that every quarter we want to launch additional functionality publicly on the automated system. So practically at the end of quarter one, we want to ensure that the automated procurement system is scaled up so that all tenders are submitted via our online automated procurement process. But two, secondly, which we need to launch before end of the quarter one, is also all the reasons for cancellation must also be published there. The reason, Chair, is if you just take the last financial year where you have cancelled more than 100 tenders, that's not right. So we need to be able to communicate better with the industry on what are the things that make these tenders to be cancelled. What are these mandatory things that they are not complying with? But also with our clients, the department, to say these are the criteria that make some of these tenders not to be awardable. So we'll also do an education to our clients, but at the same time an education to the industry to ensure that we stop this huge cancellation of tenders. So those are planned for end of this quarter. So quarter two, we should also be able to launch your check and trace functionality so that we are able to follow any tender process and understand where it is in the pipeline and why is it there. If there are delays in the evaluation of it, what is causing it? So we want to be as transparent as possible so that also our customers can help to manage us, same as the industry. So we'll be launching, Chair, these functionalities on a quarter-by-quarter basis. We are aware that there is still the big animal called IFMS that will then replace what we are doing. But we are saying at least for the next 2 years, we can be able to run with these solutions that we are building at CETA that will make it available so that at least the public can also see what is this that we are doing, can monitor also the work that we do. So every quarter, Chair, we will announce additional functionality that we are putting up onto our automated tender processes with the hope that by the end of the financial year, the whole process, the whole tendering process can be fully automated and the public can follow it on our online platform. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Sita.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Honourable Maneli, we have a very strong young lion who's going to tackle the first question. Very good question, and Honourable Sir, I can tell you it was foremost in our discussions as we did this journey of revision. So we have Ms. Nomkosi Peter who joined us. I must say, Honourable Chair, the area of expertise lies in strategic planning and performance management. So Nomkosi, can you just share with the Honourable Members, are we cutting work? Have we changed the targets for purposes of scaling down interventions? Or what's your take, Nomkosi? Ms. Peter, are you there? Okay, Honourable Members.
I'm here, Mr. Curran. Should I proceed?
Yes, we can proceed.
Please do.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. May I also indicate that I won't be able to switch on my video because I'm having connectivity issues. But in short, the reduction in outcomes was primarily to refine and adhere to best practice, whereby outcomes should be reflective of the entire organization, and where specific branches or programs then give expression to how they contribute to particular outcomes through their outcome indicators. In the case of the GCIS, what was previously the case is that of the nine outcomes, there were those that were very specific to particular branches, and also the formulation was not entirely in what we would refer to as outcome speak, but was rather an emphasis on areas that would form part of our strategic communication areas as well as areas of work. So if I were to use the example of the previous outcome that was contained in the approved strategic plan from March, was to communicate more effectively around the seven priority areas. But it would be better to articulate that as well-informed citizens, and whereby your seven MTSF priority areas then form part of the strategic areas of messaging that the organization would focus on over the five-year strategic term. We've also attempted to streamline areas that are of commonality across the organization, and hence the reduction from the nine to the five. I hope that answers the question.
So, Honourable Chair, we really were in the mode of improving, refining, consolidating, and none of our areas of work are going to be dropped or reduced or anything. And we're very proud of the work that Nomkosi has been doing to help us be more aligned and be in a better narrative around outcomes orientation. Now, Sandile Nene is going to give a bit of flesh onto the MAC, Honourable Chair. I just want to say to Honourable Chair and members, perhaps in a future iteration, we might drill in a bit more detail, but I do take the point, Chair, that we can't just have it as a goal in itself, but we need to know what is the transformation area, what is the transformative journey that will come as a result of this charter. Nene is the anchor person for that, so I'm going to ask Nene to elaborate a little bit on where we are now, and he can also speak to the matter of our intended vision for this. And then perhaps at a later date, Honourable Chair, we might pad up that area a bit more. But Nene, can you just share with the Honourable Members a little bit about the MAC Charter and its envisaged outcome, as opposed to just simply being an indicator that we have a target that we want to reach? Nene?
Thank you, Michael. And again, good afternoon, Chairperson and colleagues. I'm going to then talk briefly about the need for a sector to be transformed. In terms of the one, the
public hearings that were done by Parliament in the early 2000s, that was long before the Bee Act came to be. The marketing and communication sector came up as one of the priority sectors that needed to be transformed. And again, where we have now is the process where we are trying to do exactly that, looking at the three or at least the seven elements that are a priority for us. One of those is skills development, enterprise supply development. Essentially, we need council to actually monitor transformation. The transformation happens in a better way. It is self-regulated, where government actually does not have much say, but has the say in terms of the legislative provisions as per the Section 9 of the bills of the Constitution. So what once we have appointed the sector council, obviously is going to report to the minister through an annual report, looking at how transformation has happened in the sector. And then not only that, they would also be able to table a report to the BBB Commission. Because they work independently as well, there is no harm. In fact, it's in what we've seen in the other sector councils, where Parliament has also called them independently to deal with matters of transformation. So that's the step, that's the council that is intended to ensure that even when we move to digital, because we know that the future is digital, however, public interest issues such as the need for transformation, the need to adhere to all the elements of all the legislative provisions must happen. So that's the council that we are intending to appoint. In future, again, we are going to then integrate the council at the level of the council. We will then also integrate, because we are also discussing measures around having a print and digital diversity and transformation charter council. But in a nutshell, Chair, we have put up an advert, we gazetted, we also put adverts in our national newspapers. And we are at the time we are now, where we are seeking and making recommendations for the nominees to be appointed by the minister. How the process was, again, Chair, is that there are nominees that we get from the members of the public, but it is primarily a constituency merit-based appointment. In other words, all the subsectors of the economy that are affected by transformation, such as the Marketing Association of South Africa, such as the regulator, they then respond to an advert and give us competent persons to be appointed by the minister. And their main function is to ensure that, Chairperson, first of all, that the sector code that was gazetted in 2016 is reviewed and aligned to DTI. But primarily, they also need to ensure that transformation is reported and monitored by the minister, who is the sector sponsor of the code. At this point, Chair, I'm just saying that I'm reporting that we are at the final stages, where if we can just conclude some of those ends, we would be in the position to actually appoint the council. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Nene. Honourable Chair, that's where we are, honourable members, from the MAC charter process. And you know, our vision, honourable Chair, would be that I'm sure honourable members will know that we've had incidents that are distasteful and that leave our society wounded in the advertising and marketing space. And our vision would be that at the end of this journey, we have in place mechanisms to ensure that there's no repeat as such. And as Nene has said, the journey is quite advanced, and they will have mechanisms in place for the constant monitoring of that. So, Honourable Chair, I hope we've done justice to the follow-ups from your side. Honourable Chair, thank you very much.
Thank you, today.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I'm going to try and tackle your question. Forgive me if I've not gotten it precisely, but you mentioned repeat funding and you mentioned advertising, and you asked if we're considering making those stations commercial without compromising their legitimacy of being community media. In that context, I think yes. Firstly, I think my colleague, esteemed colleague Mike, has just spoken to the fact that advertising, and I think you, Chairperson, you also acknowledged the dwindling dwindling revenue given, sorry, advertising given the pandemic in particular at this time. So naturally, our community media and small commercial media are also struggling as a result. And that is the reason why, Chair, we actually then launched the 20 million emergency relief last year to just ensure that at least the community media and the small commercial media could still exist and that they could still do their work in the best safe way possible during the pandemic. So that's what we did. So in terms of advertising, we really, really will be going to corporate South Africa. And I think as I tried articulating this when I was answering the question from Honorable Mbele, to say that we've been going everywhere. We started going to corporate South Africa to say SAP, AB InBev, you know, we want to go to your Coca-Cola's and all these big organizations and say, please, by community media as well, but it needs to be done in a very coordinated way. And that is the reason why the late Minister Amkembu had actually volunteered to be the face of the fundraising strategy, and unfortunately it was never to be. In terms of graduating the community media to almost commercial, because we don't want to commercialize them, because they serve a different sector and the different SLMs as well, and that is the reason why South Africa has got a pre-tire media landscape, and the reason why we are community media, as it were. So the sustainability model looks at that, Honorable Chairperson. Remember, I talked about pillars, and we have, our mantra, in fact, is to build a resilient and future-forward community and small commercial media. That's what we're trying to do through the sustainability model. My colleague, Mzukashe, who heads up who's the executive for projects, he is in the room today, normally says to me, we want to graduate this community media to self-sustainability. And so what are the facets of this self-sustainability, and how would we know we've achieved it? We are going to put this to test, honorable members. We are in close conversations with and discussions with UNESCO, which came to present during our consultative conference on the terms of reference for the sustainability research last year in August. Where they are also saying that they especially Professor Guy Becker says he sits in a 39 member state committee at UNESCO, and that they've been given this task of developing a sustainability model at that level. And he was saying to me last year that South Africa, if you get it right, we may just take yours and expand on it, which I think would be a good thing. But we've got these six pillars. Technology, digital innovation, and signal distribution is one. And people that attended the conference would remember that these were actually turned into commissions. Pillar two is corporate governance and compliance, for the reasons that we know through experience that if your corporate governance structures or your corporate governance is collapsed and there's lack of compliance in your station or in your project, then you will not be able to do business with the state. The third one is content generation and professionalizing the sector through skills. We did a skills audit assessment in 2019, concluded it last year, and from that we have designed a three-year plan for the sector, informed by what comes through. And some of the things that come through are the fact that financial management is an issue, marketing is an issue, and so we're also adding digital literacy training. And so those are the packages that we think will see the sector through in terms of the fourth industrial revolution and in terms of the digital convergence. But also, I think we have not paid particular attention to developing premium content that will compel an advertiser or an investor to actually invest in the station or the print or the publishers, independent publishers. So we're looking at those things. How do we develop? What kind of content will be compelling enough for corporate South Africa, for foreign donors, if you like? I was speaking with some industry experts in December last year, and they said to us, why don't you package package your content into Swahili and other languages, and you sell it to other communities and so forth. So there's so many other discussions that we are having on what can we do. But in fact, through Zoo again, we have, I think, standardized some of the grant items, and one of them is training and development. It's there without a doubt. The fourth pillar is transformation of the print sector, which we think is being led by the GCIS. I think Sandile, my colleague Sandile Nene, has spoken to that. Pillar number five is about consolidating government support. And again, Chair, I've spoken to the fact that beyond the grant we receive from the MDDA, what can COCTA do in terms of supporting the sector? Because I think last week we were before the PCC, where we talked about the fact that some assets and broadcast equipment that is so expensive, we invest in it, and you find that because the station has fallen in arrears in rentals, the station loses the equipment, new as it is and expensive as it is, to a landlord who is angry because of the rent that is in arrears. And then we find ourselves running to courts on a monthly basis trying to get our equipment back. So what can our local government do? And those are the things that we're saying, government in terms of that kind of a support, but government also in terms of what other avenues of funding can we explore in government, post bank and so forth, in terms of the low interest loans. Pillar number six is audience measurement, and audience measurement is a big thing because it informs the value of the marketing or advertising that's going to go into that station. And at the moment, honorable members, we're exploring whether we should have our own or we should have a small organization that will be focused on providing that service to the community media, because as it is currently under the Broadcast Research Council, which also changed its not its structure, but its methodology last year, we're not sure that that system is tailor-made for the community media, and therefore we are saying that perhaps we must explore one that would be viable for the community media. So yes, Chair, I agree with you that we must upgrade them. Mzu normally says we must know what a station requires on a month-to-month basis and on an annual basis. And Chair, when we talk about the sustainability model, which is something that I'm very passionate about, because we are saying our forebearers have developed the sector to a large extent, and it is our duty to, in the development, also sustain it. We're hoping that the sustainability research will give us some form of information that will tell us that these community radio stations in far-flung rural areas are not able to sustain, at least not in the medium to long term. And so what kind of resources must we put in place? And we call them the ones in the ICU, the one in dire straits, or the ones in the red of the robot. And then we move to the middle layer or category or tier, and we say we're hoping that if we use the robot analogy, we'll then have a big amber group that it may easily fall to red or green, depending on the resources and speed at which we capacitate them. And then we say we've got your Jozi FMs. How do Jozi FMs do it? In fact, we've got, so we're aspiring to get as many Jozi FMs, but there's so many variables that must be put in place and so many resources that must be put in place in order for us to achieve that. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, MDD. Honorable members, I think we have got comprehensive responses, and I take the opportunity to thank you first as you continue to travel this road of listening to all the entities that are so many that report to the committee, but as well as the department and the entities that came before the committee for the presentations, as well as comprehensive responses. We'll continue to work this journey together, as we would be monitoring the implementation of what has been put before the committee. Thank you, Deputy Minister, for staying with us until this point. Of course, understanding the commitments that arise. So in that score, one would really to say we're closing at this point until we are able to meet later in the evening as the committee when we consider the other entities that will be coming before the committee. This meeting is officially adjourned until we meet again. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Members.
Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Members.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, colleagues.
Thank you, Honourable Members.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, colleagues. Chair. Thank you, colleagues. Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Bye, colleagues.
Hey, Seda.
Hey, good day.
Hey, I'm good, my brother. And let's wait for our principal to leave so that we can chat.
I'll chat you offline again.
Yeah, I'll see you,
Matthew. Yeah. Sure.